Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a brand new week of liberal, progressive, freewheeling conversation right here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. I'm Bob, and I'm glad to be with you, glad to have you with us, all of us, in the chat room, listening quietly somewhere, or perhaps not even with us right now, but going to be with us later via podcast. However you join the program, we're awfully glad that you do. Oh, let's see. I want to start off the pro, since it's Monday and everything. Start off by noting something. You know that I can't get along or couldn't get along without WD40.com. Well, they have undergone a change, a facelift, if you will, as the world prepares to say goodbye to that big-eyed, jug-eared little lout who presently occupies the White House. The boys at WD-40, Wally and Dookie, and in spirit, Clyde, have revamped and come up with something wholly irreverent and completely wonderful. The new address is morningconstitution.com. Morningconstitution.com. And it's a community-driven site now. It's still got the same great stuff that it's always had, but much more user-friendly. And I'm sure you'll enjoy it when you go there. I think WD40.com still redirects to morningconstitution.com, so I think either one gets you there. But once you get there, bookmark morningconstitution.com and be glad you did, because Wally and Dookie do a heck of a job every day. And, you know, they've got really good news hound noses. There we go. Newshound noses. They've got a sense for what matters. And in fact, from yesterday, a post by our buddy Wally. World War II versus Bush's economy. Guess which cost more? Just how much is $3.8 trillion? Man, can't even. Yeah, and you need to kind of study. First, says Wally, ponder $1 million. For the vast majority of people, that's a hell of a lot of money. Enough to pay off all the bills if spent wisely to live comfortably, although not extravagantly, for the rest of their lives. It's $50,000 a year for 20 years. If I was careful, $1 million would mean that I could retire right now and never work another day in my life. If I took a part-time Joe job during doing something I enjoy, I could do a lot better on that million. But $1 million isn't a drop in the bucket. Oh, $3.8 trillion. No. Take that million and multiply it by 1,000. That puts you into some real money. The billionaire club. Not a bad place to be, I imagine. I'm not sure I could spend $1 billion, Wally says, over the rest of my life. I'd buy a better computer to do this website on, and Dookie and I would have some sweet-ass offices someplace nice, and we'd even be able to buy software so Dookie wouldn't have to work so hard to make this free stuff do things it was never designed to do. But again, what's $1 billion compared to $3.8 trillion? Trillion. It's like peeing in the pool. Not enough to change the color or temperature of the water. Unless you told someone about it, they'd never even notice it. To get to $3.8 trillion, Wally says, take that original $1 million and multiply it by 3.8 million. It's an unimaginable number. And it's coming out of your pocket, and your children's pockets, and your grandchildren's. I'm sure they'll be thanking us for this burden when they're abandoning us in nursing homes as if we were Nebraska teenagers. Oh, you're a funny one, Wally. And we never did get around to talking to them about the Nebraska teenager story, did we? And it's fascinating, that. That red state with all its culture of life. But apparently the culture of life doesn't have enough sense to correctly draft a piece of legislation so that then people wind up just dropping their kids off because, you know, I've had it with him. There's a new threat all over America. You watch your mouth or we're going to Nebraska, boy. Sad, isn't it? And in the, by the way, just a little cursory reminder to Values America of the teenagers who have been dropped off in Nebraska. Well, there have been more than a few. There have been, in fact, let's see, 30 children. 30 children have been dropped off in Nebraska who are not infants, who are teenagers. A little statistical breakdown from the Department of Health and Human Services. Oh, I'm sorry, 34 children. 34 children have been dropped off. 27 of the children have received mental health treatment. 28 of the children come from single-parent homes. 22 children had a parent with a history of incarceration. And of the 30 children, 20 of them are, come on, values voters, white. Only eight of the 30 are African American. I seem to recall Bingo Billy Bennett, that upstanding arbiter of right-wing morals and values and so, virtues and so forth, say, do you remember this? I remember this. When he said, if you want to get rid of America's troubles, the first thing you do is abort all the black babies. Remember that? Yeah, that dirty little bastard's still earning a hefty salary for saying that kind of spew. But it would appear to be the white folks that are having most of the problems if Nebraska is to be used as any sort of a barometer. There are 6,600 children in Nebraska state custody. It's one of the highest per capita rates in the United States. There in the middle of Family Values, Nebraska. And the DHHR there is trying to get a message out there, trying to get the message out. Don't wait until it's a crisis. Reach out to your family and friends. Holy smoke, people have traveled from into Nebraska because of this stupid piece of drafting from Michigan, from Indiana, from Iowa, from Georgia, and from Florida. Georgia? Georgia? Home of godly, upstanding, righteous, moral, family values? Yeah, Georgia. Stunning. State Senator Tom White of Nebraska says that lawmakers were caught off guard by the number of teenagers taken in under the law. Do these people live in America? I don't know. Or maybe they just fly in from a comfortable little Polynesian or Caribbean island somewhere. What you've seen is an extraordinary cry for help from people all across the country. Nebraska can't afford to take all of them. Nebraska would like to be able to, but they know that we can't. So we're going to have to change the law. And there are even people who are, well, what did we do wrong? Every other state created one of these safe haven laws, has made it for infants of 3 days. Some have argued for 30. And no, not Nebraska. They're smarter than everybody else. So they wind up getting, but the thing is, of not one of the 34 children who's been dropped off was an infant. Not one. the right-wing Republican governor of Nebraska has put out a statement, please don't bring your teenager to Nebraska. Please. No infants. Bunch of teenagers. But behind all this, there are real issues. And those issues have to do with the broken America that George W. Bush and his cronies have helped create. An America that does not have an adequate mental health care system for either its adults or its children. Ask Rick Goodner. He's in the thick of things. He's in the swamp. He lives in the mental health care nightmare swamp of America. He's in Texas. He knows how desperately difficult it is for someone to get help for a mentally troubled child. He knows. And it's not just Texas. It's not just Georgia, Iowa, Florida, Michigan, Indiana. It's all over. Worse some places than others. But you cannot ask the question why and not immediately have the answer come back to you. This is what happens when you have conservatives in office. Well, let the private sector sort out the mental health problems. As long as there's a little profit attached to it, I'm sure we'll do fine. Maybe we can get them some bailout money. Isn't that the way they are? Isn't that how they talk? The private sector can solve all these problems. See, that's the thing. You think government, all you got to do is throw money at it and you can solve the problem. Well, you know, a lot of these kind of problems are solved by money. Because I don't know too many mental health professionals who work for nothing. A lot of them work for damn near nothing. But I don't know many who work for nothing. But where right-wing conservative cheap wage political social types are concerned, well, you know how it is. If you just don't look at it, it doesn't really exist. So that's a starting place. That's something worth discussing and worth remembering. As I noted last week, thanks to a really, really, truly, genuinely hateful piece of garbage legislation passed in Arkansas by the right-wingers, the most loving, caring gay couple on earth are not allowed to take in a child as troubled as one of those dropped off in Nebraska. Can you imagine? I know. Stunning, isn't it? So, I got to thinking about that because I had seen something earlier in the day. You know, I get these right-wing emails. And I got this one earlier today, and, you know, you just can't not open one that says, for a subject line, why Christians should be troubled by the election of President-elect Obama. We're having a little grammar moment in the subject line, but never mind that. The election of President-elect Obama. Actually, it would be the election of Barack Obama to the presidency, or troubled by President-elect Obama, but... The election of President-elect Obama, I don't think you can elect a president-elect. That's sort of from the redundancy department of redundancy. It says things over and over again. It repeats itself. It's redundant. But never mind me. Yes. Joe Green. He's a husband and a father of four. He's a published author and a radio station owner. And he travels the world as a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ. No, he doesn't. He travels the world as a minister of the gospel of hate and the rejection of the teachings of Jesus Christ. He says the following, and they were his words, why Christians should be troubled by the election of President-elect Obama. Meep. Grammar emergency, grammar emergency. He writes, as an African American, I would love to be overjoyed by the recent election of a black man to become the president of the United States of America. This has been a long time coming. Many blacks who have passed on would love to have seen the day that this country would experience the opportunity to vote for a person of color to hold the highest office in the land. I will be praying for our newly elected president, but unfortunately, as a minister of the gospel, I am very much troubled by what President Obama stands for. Well, apparently he stands for prepositions at the end of sentences, Reverend Green, but never mind that. You know what, Reverend Green? Tell you what, why don't you spend a little less time praying and a little more time doing? Faith without works is dead, brother. Get off your knees and get on your feet. Be part of the solution and quit being part of the problem with garbage like what you've written here. I've read Barack Obama's books, writings, and watched videos of many of his speeches. The implications of Barack Obama's beliefs should concern any Bible-believing Christian. And I sincerely believe... Bible-believing Christian. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Now, you know that I thought... I read it quite frequently, actually. And I read it not to make fun of it, not to make light of it, but to try to learn something about an ancient people who were baffled by, you know, the wheel. To see what kind of insight they had. You know, things like, and the earth stood still. You know. Bible-believing. Morons. I sincerely believe we are about to face some very trying times in the near future. As Christians living by the standards of the Word of God, we will be facing a serious uphill battle. And if we do not stand up for Christian values, we will be silenced forever. Of course, he knows no one's going to silence him. What he's going to do is to use this ginned-up, phonied-up, faked-up, dummied-up, rubed-up fear of Barack Obama as a means to try to once again line his own pockets. And he will never be silenced. No, no. Just like the religion industry has in the past raised money on the backs of liberals and gay folk, this guy and many other like him are going to try to raise money on the back of Barack Obama and flog him for the next 4 years to try to shake the money out of the pockets of the gullible and the credulous. President-elect Obama ran on a campaign of change. On the surface, we are led to believe that this change is simply referring to a political and economic change. I believe, there's that word, I believe, have the attempt to abort them. Now, this guy's either a moron or a liar. Because the law that he is said to have voted against already was in existence at the time that this was just another little right-wing tactic. It was a right-wing red herring. Obama also made a point by mentioning homosexuals, not only in his acceptance speech at the Democratic nomination. Why, brethren and sistren, don't you know that it says in 33rd Philippians, thou shalt not mention the homosexuals in your acceptance speech, neither mention ye them in common conversation. Hallelujah. Praise Jeebus. Yeah, I know. But also again, he mentioned when he won the presidential election. It is quite clear that he is looking to change the moral direction of this country in a way that I do not believe most Christians want to go. Well, I object to this man using the word Christians, frankly. I mean, it's not like it's trademarked or copyrighted or anything. Anybody can call themselves anything. A little, you know, I'm an adherent of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Or maybe I'm a Frisbeterian, and there's nobody who can stop me from saying it. But this guy's about as much as a Christian, as much a Christian as, as a hog's a Rastafarian, okay? Or a Zoroastrian. There we go. I am making a couple of predictions, he says. You do not have to agree with me. Well, how just how benevolent of you. That's just nice, Reverend Joe. You do not have to agree with me, but I encourage you to keep this article, and within the first year of Obama's presidency, I believe you will see the following occurrences take place. Whoa, he's moved into the prophesy. Prophesy, brother, prophesy! First, President Obama will look to remove any limitations on abortions. That's right, men will now be able to have abortions. Just as he did in the Illinois State Senate, he will look to allow a baby's life to be terminated even in the latter stages of pregnancy. He will push. Don't push. Push. Don't push. Push. He will push to allow second and third trimester abortions, as well as allowing for the death of infants who are born alive after surviving an abortion attempt. Second, President Obama will look to give same-sex couples the same rights as heterosexual couples under law. Really? You mean like he would afford them the equal protection of the law? I don't think that's just one of those things that I came up with in a hallucination one day. Equal protection of the law. Oh, yeah, that's actually in the Constitution, isn't it? Yeah. But see, the Constitution doesn't matter to a freak like this. He will also be a proponent of giving transgender and transsexual people special rights and protections under the law of the land. Well, what do you mean, Reverend Joe? Maybe the right not to be murdered? You know, some time back, Peter Godbold, on his wonderful program in the past, Strictly Confidential, covered the story of Dwanna Johnson. Dwanna Johnson was a resident of Memphis. She had been arrested. She was a trans woman. She was arrested on a charge of prostitution while she was in custody. She was beaten. She was repeatedly called faggot and he-she by the officers who arrested her. Jail video surveillance cameras showed the police officer knocking the daylights out of her, just slobber knocking her while she was held in the Shelby County Criminal Justice Center. The officer hit Johnson several times with, this big, strong, tough man had handcuffs wrapped around his knuckles and was hitting her repeatedly while another officer held her so she couldn't protect herself. Then they maced her. The two officers were eventually fired from the Memphis Police Department. I'm not upset at all with the fact that everything just crapped out. In the middle of a lovely program start, I'm not angry. I'm not frustrated. No, I'm Bob Kincaid, man of peace. Yeah, Marty just wrote in to say, see what happens when you piss off the theocratic industrial complex, Bob? Yeah, I know. I know. But it ain't that easy. They don't get rid of me. Not that easy. Breathing in. Breathing out. Getting that third eye just completely squeegeed clean. Yes. All better. Going to be just fine. We all know the religion industry is a poisonous bunch of bloodthirsty sons of bitches. We know that they worship not the creator of the universe, that they worship mammon and filthy lucre and eat the beating hearts out of little babies at every opportunity. That's why they're the religion industry. It's all going to be better now. I found my happy place. There's a beer volcano and a stripper factory. Look, there's one rolling out for me right now, and oh, here comes a river of beer flowing over my grandmother's paisley shawl. Ah. We'll get back into the swing of things momentarily, but let's go ahead and bring a caller on to Bob Kincaid's relaxation happy place. Hello, caller.
Deep breaths. That's right.
Deep
breaths.
Yes.
The sound of my voice carry you over the waves of tranquility.
Flag staggin' not pole frazzleat, and I get...
Oh, no, it's...
And that feels, I gotta tell you, that feels a lot better than... Yeah, I'll be happy now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm in the process of trying to build this computer over here, and I need a break.
Yeah, what's this about? What's this about? You're off in the wonderful world of quad cores now? Yeah, Albert's letting go of the L3 cache. Yes, letting go.
Baseline now.
No, dadgummit, I'm a caveman when it comes right down to it, and I'd just soon go out and hit something with a ball bat or a club.
I hear you. Oh, I hear you, because it's Newt Gingrich. Who, remember when he was trying to play sane?
Yeah.
I know it was real quick, but he did try to play sane, and you know, that confuses me sometimes, but he has freaking lost his mind.
Oh, they all have.
Oh, it's just, there's a gay, secular fascism in this country that wants to impose its will on the rest of us. And they've said this kind of thing before, but...
No, they've got, these people are going to turn bloody and deadly pretty quick. They're setting it all up. I exchanged some emails with Peter Godbold over the weekend, sharing stories with him coming out of the religion industry about this poor elderly woman who was attacked by a bunch of homosexual activists who took away her cross. No, really.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure about that.
And I saw another news story referring gay fascists who want to keep the Mormons from being able to have a voice.
Well, yeah. Look, they're gay fascist communists. It doesn't matter if, you know, and none of these things.
Gay fascist communist anarcho-syndicalists. How's that? Whoa, what a mouthful.
Exactly. And pagan. They're everything.
Pagan animists.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Pagan animist, atheist, gay, homosexual, activist, fascist, communists. Yeah, anarcho-syndicalists.
I I don't understand how they can even look at themselves in the mirror. You know, and you know this as well as I do. You know, they are, you know, you're right. They are trying to build this, they are, you know, they're trying to build our worst nightmare. And I'll tell you what, you know, if Barack Obama can keep his, I don't care if he never comes in public ever. He doesn't have to. You know what, Barack Obama, you know, I'll tell you one thing. What they should do, one of the things that we should do, is we should instantly start torturing Dick Cheney, you know, like making him, by making him sleep with his wife or something. But we should do something like that and find out these undisclosed locations that he's been hiding in. And then just, you know, let Barack just sit there. And, you know, it'd be even better. Because I kind of try. I think he's a nice guy. I think, you know, I think he's got his best, I think he's got his best heart forward for us in America and stuff like that. You know, yeah, I really like his answers that he keeps giving us and stuff. And not to say I'm totally drinking the Kool-Aid, but I tell you what, I think he's a decent human being, and I trust my kids with him. So, well, maybe I am. Maybe I am drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit. But there's no, it's not bitter. It's sweet Kool-Aid. But anyway. So, you know, one of the things that I would be hysterical is if, like, the only way he talked to us was, like, on these big screens and, like, audiences and stuff like that.
Oh, you're just trying to drive the right wing nuts, aren't you?
Yeah, I do. I want them to... No, and I can't even say that I want...
You want them to come completely unglued and just start babbling in tongues in the middle of the street and stuff, don't you? And then we can cart them off and take them somewhere and give them medicine that'll make them feel all better.
But, you know, tomorrow is the anniversary of one of their classic freakouts. So... And you know that. I mean, even though, you know, he was kind of, I guess, the other side, but he was also that way. And you know, I'll tell you what, you know, I tell anybody, you know, don't watch any of these Jim Jones documentaries. It's going to ruin your week. It's just horrible, especially with this. I'm not even going to talk about it. Nobody watch it. Don't watch it.
I know.
Just don't.
Yeah, leave it alone.
But, you know, You know, and they talk about this bailout, dude, and my stomach and skin crawls at the thought of this. And I know it's only $30 billion, but, you know, not for nothing. You know, I look at the auto industry, the entire, like, you know, and, you know, not the people that work there. I mean, man, we can be building anything. Give me a break. I look at the people that are, you know, in their mansions in Detroit, you know, Detroit, what a place of dichotomy, huh?
I know.
On Halloween, they gotta go put out all the abandoned houses that are on fire out while they are on the other side of town. People are literally, you know, have butlers and stuff.
But, you know, there are parts of Detroit that are turning into Mayan ruins.
Yeah. Oh, it's scary. It's, you know, it is. It's just hard. Of what's happening to, you know, and it's not just Detroit, but, you know, anytime you centralize something like that, it was, and, you know, this is we get what we get. But you know me, I really want to see, I want to see the big three die. I do. I want to see them die. I want to bury them. I want to burn them and then spread their ashes, you know, to four corners.
But what do we do with the workers, Albert?
Bob, there's so much to do with the workers.
I know that. But what I'm getting at is I've got one of these right wing emails. You know, I love these things. The right wing does my show prep for me just about every day. But I've got one here talking about killing Detroit. The right wing is, and something occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that gives me pause as we think about all of this. And that is, this is the right wing's greatest opportunity in the midst of their greatest defeat.
Yes.
And if they get away with this, we will know that we have failed to run them to ground. And it'll be our fault. And what I mean by that, just hear me out for a second.
I think I'm hearing you. Okay, go ahead.
What does the right wing hate almost more than anything else, if not more than anything else? They hate working people with a voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If they could find a way to bust the unions by destroying Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think they do it? I mean, I've got a paragraph right here from this creep named Robert Romano in a column titled The Living Dead. All right? The whole reason the industry is failing is because of the obscene union contracts and legacy costs that inflate the cost of the vehicles, making them uncompetitive compared to foreign competition. Just simply doing business outside of Michigan could make the cars more affordable for consumers. Certainly scaling back is in order. All of the above can be addressed with a bankruptcy, and those arguing against bankruptcy are simply shills for big labor.
Right. Well, you know, I'll tell you one thing, and I think, you know, I think this is, let me see if I can talk you down on this one. If indeed they get what they want, that will just make unions stronger. Think about it.
I'm doing that, but I'm having a hard time getting to it.
Well, where did the unions come from? They weren't born when we were in the boom. They were born because of how horrible it became. And, you know, over the years, these same kinds of people like Romano and their parroting of, you know, their minions, their lords and stuff like that, you know, they parrot that kind of crap. Well, they have, you know, the frickin' unions. And they have, like, you know, they've sat there and probably even, infiltrated the union. You know, if they got union busters that'll sit there and pretend to be a Walmart worker, you don't think that they're going to have people that are union busters that are going to get paid double, get paid by the union, try to work for the union, and then do everything they can to kind of, you know, sabotage the union by sitting there and allowing things like the way that big business has been going, by investing in big oil as unions are invested in? You think that's a smart idea? I mean, honestly, no, the whole system's kind of corrupt, and we need to start all over. We need a reset button. We've just updated Windows, okay? We've updated a massive service pack, and it's time to restart the computer. It has to be restarted, or the changes will not take effect. Okay, we'll have unions stronger than ever, because everyone will sit there and go, whoa, wait a minute, we can't allow these companies to do this anymore. We need to take more of a say in what we build. We can't sit here and allow ourselves to get invested in this and this and that. You know, and I understand in terms of, you know, they talk about health care, and they sit there and they make it, you know, like, well, what are we going to do? If the unions lose their health care, we're even further from universal health care.
Well, okay, stop there for a minute. Let's take this to health care. I remember a statistic from a couple of years ago. It's probably gone up, that there was $1,400 of cost for health care in every car that Detroit produced, as compared to maybe $800 in a Japanese car. Now, if that's the case, and I'm not saying that that's gospel, Albert.
It can't be.
But if that's the case, $1,400. What is that as an expressed percentage of $40,000? That is what? 5%? Less than 5%?
It's a hunk.
It's less than, but on a $40,000 car, $1,500 worth of health insurance is less than 5% of the sticker price on the lot.
That's not how it works, Bob. That's not how the car business works.
I'm not saying that it is, but
no. But that's how they pretend that it does, and it doesn't.
What is it in Germany? What is the healthcare cost on the sticker on a new, let's say, Audi?
Audi. Yeah, there we go.
It's zero. Zero.
Yeah, zero. Exactly.
Because
everybody's paying for it.
Because everybody's got healthcare in Germany.
Yeah, and they pay for it with taxes, and
for this right winger to say that the Detroit's problems are caused by working people, I'm sorry, I didn't know that the UAW designed the damned automobiles that nobody wants to buy.
Exactly. You know, they're slitting their own throat. The thing is the reason that they're against bailing this out is because they know that this is going to be a very, they know it's like, you know, it's arranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. You're right about, I think you're right, personally, my belief is I think you're right, that they, this is, if we don't stop them now, like in a sense, what they're doing is they're co-opting the position that we should be having. They are sitting there and saying, whoa, we just got our rear ends handed to us on a, you know, a pewter platter, and if we don't start getting a little populist, because we bail out the guys that are in charge of these companies are the problem. Okay? This whole thing is like cancer. Okay? And it's just like, I mean, the car companies is a cancer of an even bigger problem. Okay? You know, you sit there and you look at this car company. You're right, man. We make these big, stupid cars. We make basically, virtually, zero. Zero, as far as I've seen. And I've sold cars, okay? I know how this business works. I've seen how it works, right? Especially Ford, especially the big three. The big threes were the worst companies to work for, okay? Now, one of the things that these guys do, all right, is they sit there and bury you in their brand. Do you know that? If you buy a Lincoln or a Mercury or one of these things, and they say, you know, and they talk, well, $1,500, that's how much is in health care, then where the hell are you getting this money for a $5,000 rebate? Hey, you guys buy in wholesale. You think you'd get steel for a pretty reasonable cost. You know, I mean, they get $5,000 rebates, this and this and this. You remember this? Thousands? Oh, get in a lease. Get in a lease. Oh, yeah, get in a lease. Everybody's getting in leases and buy. How many new cars can you get? You can't sit there and look at the car business as something sustainable. It's not sustainable. It's not sustainable for
people. Let's look at one model in particular. Let's look at one model in particular, Albert, the Ford Crown Vic. We've talked about the Crown Vic in the past. It's a rock solid automobile.
Yes, it is.
It's got a big old honking V8 engine.
Yep.
But under the right circumstances, that sucker will get 28-29 miles a gallon on the open highway.
Mm-hmm.
And for a big old lead sled with that much, I mean, there's room for a family and the dog and the cat in the back seat of that thing. Sarah Palin and Todd could get an entire family back there.
And a cooler at their feet.
Yeah. There's not just oodles of those being sold on the public market, but, however, it is the car of choice for almost every law enforcement agency in the United States. It is to police forces what the Hummer is to the military.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a well-made car.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes forever, and frankly, you can buy them used pretty cheap, because they're not exactly sexy.
Oh, $2,000.
But what I'm getting at here, you know, they did that right. But by the same token, nobody under 40 would be caught dead purchasing one. So it's a failure. It's a failure of marketing. It's a failure of design. As far as I can tell, you know, Detroit's building a pretty decent automobile these days. I mean, as far as the worker quality is concerned, it's design and it's marketing. You know, look at Ford knuckling under to the knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing wing nuts at the American Family Association. Oh, we're going to boycott Ford because they're selling cars to the queers. And Ford knuckled under.
Yeah, well, not surprised. It's, you know, they have a history of doing,
you know, General Motors. Maybe if General Motors was producing less Denalis, I mean, I saw some mention of a hybrid Cadillac Escalade the other day, Albert.
Well, there was a hybrid Hummer. You see, I've just got to say, you know, you know, and you say the Crown Vic and this, but, you know, those things are, you know, like, everybody loves a Velociraptor, and everybody loves a Tyrannosaurus Rex. The thing is these things are extinct. And a Crown Vic is extinct. A Hummer is extinct. The internal combustion engine running on petroleum fuel needs to become extinct.
Right. That's the inquiry that I'm going toward.
Okay.
It is not the workers' fault. That these idiots have persisted. I mean, look at Chrysler. Okay, I was raised on Chryslers.
Yeah, me too.
My dad came back to him again and again and again. Even after gas tanks fell off, cars burst into flame, Dad was there on the lot buying him another Chrysler because the president of GM said in 1948 that a working man was no better than a bird dog.
Mm-hmm. And man, my grandpa had a lathe, so he could have a Chrysler.
Yeah.
He had tools.
Yeah. So, yeah. But I was raised on those. But what? I got a Dodge truck.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 1995, and I'm going to drive it till the wheels fall off, or throws a rod or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was built in Mexico.
Yeah, it was. It was from parts created in Canada. Yes.
Yep.
But I got me American truck.
Yeah, you do.
North American leased.
That's right.
Let's see. My parents had an. Oh, God, I forget what it was. It was a cute little thing. It was a Chrysler product. An Eagle Premier. It was an Eagle Premier. Cute little sedan. Had a Volvo engine and a Mercedes transmission, or maybe the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Great little car.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm getting too far afield.
Okay.
We can still build automobiles.
Oh, absolutely.
And all the things that the automobile industry is tied to can continue to exist. You know, General Motors slaughtered, we talked about this, General Motors slaughtered Delphi a couple of years ago.
They liked doing that.
Oh, they loved it. They loved it.
They love slaughtering competition or anything that could...
But this was, one of their parts suppliers, and they got them, for people working for $27 an hour, they got them to work for $6.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, workers.
Yep.
So I think there's going to be something on the order of a bailout. I suspect it.
Yeah.
Because among other things, these are Democratic strongholds we're talking about, and the Democrats are not going to give the Republicans that kind of leeway. And in fact, the Republican Party, if it persists in saying let GM die, will be dead in places like Indiana that just turned blue. The Republicans will have to have somebody say what Lyndon Johnson said about the South and the Democrats, that we'll lose Indiana for a generation. That's what the Republicans are facing. I really, sincerely, honestly, and I hate this word, believe this. But what we have to do is, power of the people, baby.
Yeah.
And, I say that there be, I hate to use this word, but a purge. All these fat bastards at the top of the corporate hierarchy at GM and Chrysler and Ford, goodbye. Go home and wait for your year's worth of Rice-A-Roni for your lovely parting gift.
I say, here's an idea. Because they are making a comeback. And they don't have to be communists. You can have them in a democracy, and actually they operate with democracy very well, and I think it would fit into the union structure very well. Co-op them. Make the workers owners. If we're billing them out, then we need to have some sort of say in terms of what they're making. I would not work for a company like that. Why? Because I wouldn't want to make that crap. I wouldn't work selling these vehicles because they don't believe in their distribution. Okay? And if we're going to do anything, right, and it's really not that much. I know this is what they do with these frickin' numbers, and this drives me nuts. $30 billion is a lot of money. Okay, we can make, we can have a stairway to the space station with $30 billion. But it's really not that much in light of $500 billion or $800, whatever they want. It's not that much in terms of a trillion. Which is another thing that we weren't for that, were we? I don't remember being for that Wall Street bailout at all.
No.
Yeah. And I just gotta, if we're gonna do this, and we're probably gonna do it because, people, they don't understand. Like, keep smoking cigarettes. So keep smoking cigarettes. Keep smoking cigarettes. Oh, I got this cough. Well, keep smoking cigarettes. Okay. Oh, maybe it's the cigarettes. All right. Well, it's too late now. Okay, now I quit my cigarettes. I'm done. I haven't had a cigarette since August. It is it's not easy, but it is possible. Okay, it's not going to be easy to completely
revamp and switch GM. I mean, God, I would love to get into their basement where they throw all their patents that they buy up. You know, you've seen the movie Who Killed the Electric Car?
Yes.
You've seen it.
Yes.
You know that GM went into L.A. and bought up their trolley system and all that other stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they killed it. And then they turned everything into suburban sprawl. You see, but the problem is this is not GM, people. This is not so... Who cares if it's GM? When we run out of oil, GM ain't going to be making squat. Okay? And we're going to run out. It's a finite resource. It is, period. End of story. It's a finite resource.
Right. That's why we need it. You know, why is it that you can buy, just for instance, why can you buy a Volkswagen with that beautiful little 1.8-liter turbo diesel engine in it that'll get you 60 miles to the gallon that you can fill up in Chicago and drive to New York without stopping for fuel?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it you can get one of those from a German auto manufacturer, but you can't get one from an American auto manufacturer?
Because Volkswagen, the people that work there have something to say about it. Okay? The Germans and the Europeans.
I mean, when Toyota is turning the world on its ear with, you know, not just the Prius, not just a little itty-bitty Prius, but this beautiful SUV, the Highlander Hybrid.
They're gorgeous.
Yes, I've driven them, fell in love with them, would have given anything to have had one.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could have put my whole family in it, among other things. I can't put my whole family in a Prius.
You can put your family in a Touareg, but you can't afford the Touareg.
Yeah, right. But what I'm getting at the same time that Toyota was doing that, and Honda's moving into it, and you know, I think Nissan may be coming along, and who knows what, and the beautiful diesels from Mercedes, and I think even BMW had one at one time, and Volkswagen had these gorgeous diesels. At the same time all this is happening, what's Chrysler doing? New. The brand new revamped Dodge Charger with an 8-mile-per-gallon Hemi-head engine. Yeah, everybody is going to see you in that car and think that your penis is 2 feet long. And some of these were beautiful things. The Chrysler 300 sedan, as sedans go, drove one of those just for the hell of it one time. That thing pushed me back in the seats when I put my foot on the pedal. Yeah. Oh, it was hot. And they reintroduced the station wagon, and that was cool. Any one of those things with one of those gorgeous 5-cylinder diesel engines that Mercedes builds.
Bob.
But wait. Merck, if you try to pin this on Detroit, Albert, what you'll get in response is, America doesn't want none of them. They don't like the way diesel smells, and they don't like the way they knock around and make it sound like it's broken down engines, and they don't like no diesel. And we only build the cars what America wants. We're just responding to the market. Now, on the other hand, I got an email rolling in here from our buddy David in Tennessee, who offers the following. Yes, a GM worker with 10 years getting $75 an hour is part of the problem. Part of it. That same 10-year worker at Toyota in Russellville, Kentucky, gets $45 an hour. Both figures include all benefits long and short term. The bigger problem is, however, U.S. car makers, and this makes a hell of a lot of sense to me, U.S. car makers are chasing profits one quarter at a time. The future is never more than 90 days away. So for as long as a U.S. car maker can chase profits with a car of short future, they'll do it. Those in charge want those quarterly stock bonuses. These whores on the stock market will not think 3 years down the road. Pardon the pun. What are we going to sell in 3 years? Who cares? They want that big payday in 90 days. There's the problem. Invest in new models? Never. Invest in ads for the SUVs. And by the way, he also notes GM will make less than 100 hybrid Escalades. It's bait for an ad campaign. It is, in a word, greenwashing.
Exactly, just like the EV1 was. The reason they took those cars off the road, you remember that excuse? The reason they took them off the road is because they didn't have spare parts. What the hell kind of, what?
I know.
You don't have spare parts? What are you talking about? Build them! What? And you're right, and David's absolutely right. It is greenwashing. And this is why I'm saying it needs to die. It's a cancer. It's a freaking cancer. Cut it off your freaking nose. I don't care what people are getting paid. Because they're, I mean, if we're all going off the cliff. If somebody don't hit the brakes, we're going to fly off of it. And then it doesn't matter who's wearing a Rolex or who's got Armani or anything like that. You know, and I'll tell you what, you know, it's going to be like Alive. It's going to be like Alive, Bob. And when the plane crashes into the side of the mountain and the chocolate and the cigarettes run out, I know who I'm eating. I know who I'm eating. And I know I'll save a bottle of marinade. Okay? I mean, because that's essentially what they're asking. They're saying, oh, yeah, well, I want my pate and caviar. You know, I'm fattening myself up for you guys later. You know, what is this money worth? What is this really, really, really worth?
But see, the reality, though, at this point, I'd say you and I are involved in some philosophy. The reality, however, is that just as I said a couple of years ago, Barack Obama, and we didn't know it was going to be Barack Obama at the time. It might have been Hillary Clinton or God knows anybody. It might have been Al Gore. But whoever was coming into the White House, the Bush administration and the Republican Party in general were going to make double damn sure that nobody could enact any sweeping legislation that would bring about profound change in this country. So Barack Obama has been cornered into a bailout before he's ever even gotten anywhere near taking the oath of office. And I hate that, and I hate it for him.
Well,
so,
I think he's smart. I think he's smart. I think he's got a backbone like a ferret, and he will. I personally, when I see him talk about it, he's, you know, I'd love to be able to sit down and have a cup of coffee with the guy for, you know, an hour or so. And, you know, sit there and really kind of say, you know, hey, Barack, you know, we're running out of boil. I mean, what would he disagree with about what we've said?
Anything in what we've said to disagree with.
Well, exactly. Well, he's going to be the first president since Jimmy Carter that takes this whole peak oil thing seriously. I mean, it's on his map. I mean, he knows that. He knows the party's over. He's even preparing us already. He's telling us, like, you guys don't understand what kind of sacrifice. We got problems. You saw the 60 Minutes thing. And I know there was parts of that 60 Minutes interview where you saw that this man was so human, you couldn't help but smile. At least I caught myself grinning. I'm like, oh, my God. This guy's a fucking human being. He's somebody that knows what it's like to make peanut butter and jelly because you don't got any other food in the house. He's somebody that you can sit there and say, hey, Barack, you know, we need solar panels. He's like, damn right we do. He's like, yeah, but, you know, we need a place the size of Nevada to do it. Nah, we should put it on people's roofs. Everybody's roof. In the whole country. Every shopping center. Everywhere. Put them everywhere, right? We've already talked on this program, right? What, a month? Within the last month, there's been two major groundbreaking, huge, huge breakthroughs when it comes to solar panel photovoltaics. Huge. Right, there's the nano coating that you covered, and there was the black silicone that I brought to the, you know, that I saw. Okay, now the black silicone makes the thing 500 times more sensitive, and the nano coating lets it use 100% of whatever it's getting because it doesn't allow the light to block the photons to bounce back out. Hello.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm absorbing it all.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying. Hello. Now is the time. Now is the time to put these workers to work. Now is the time to build, you know, these high-speed electric rail systems, because we will have the.
Well, let's ask another question prompted by another comment from David in Tennessee. We're talking about the big three, GM, Ford, Chrysler, who aren't nearly as big as those three used to be.
No.
He says, letting the big three die? Let's not.
Yep.
And you know who wants the big three saved more than anyone? All the foreign car companies making cars here. Whether it's Mercedes in Alabama or BMW in South Carolina, Toyota in Kentucky and West Virginia and Indiana, Nissan in Tennessee, all the foreign companies making cars here. Why? The parts subcontract. And this is where the stuff gets kind of complicated and you're kind of grateful for a guy with a real good brain like Barack Obama. The parts subcontractors sell 65% of their production to the big three and 35% to those foreign car manufacturers in the U.S. The big three fails. The foreign makers don't have parts suppliers. Many of them, so many would fail that the guys making parts couldn't exist. Then long-term, 5 to 7 years, it could be corrected, but in those years before, every offshore manufacturer will be in the vernacular of the South, cutting a fat hog. That transition could virtually eliminate car manufacture in this country. And that's what we're talking about. Are we willing to just say we don't want to build no cars no more?
Well, all right. First, I just got to say, we need to build different vehicles. Different, completely different. We need to build electric vehicles. Like Bob, you could have an electric vehicle. I've said this 100 times. You can have this thing so hot rotted it jumps off the ground when you put the accelerator on it.
You want to?
I mean, they're ridiculous. Now, well, what do we need for this? Now, we need more battery technology. Well, that's probably, I'm sure they got some sort of battery somewhere. I'm sure it's not that difficult, okay? I mean, if we could do all the things that we can do, right? If we can make a missile go down a chimney, we can figure out how to make a battery last.
Yeah, that doesn't cost $4,000 to replace.
Exactly. All right, so now we're sitting there, and it doesn't, I mean, and they already have it. It's there. This stuff is there. We can crack hydrogen with the solar panels that we can put out. We can do all these things, okay? There's so many different
things. But I think what you're identifying, Albert, is all every last thing that you've just mentioned, all these doable things require will, and they require both patience and toughness on the part of the American people. And they require political guts that, frankly, I don't know if we have.
Then we are doomed. You want your big three? Then you want to be extinct. I'm serious. That's how I feel about it. If you want your big three, we're doomed.
Why can't the big three, for instance, just as a for instance, why can they not? Why can't they retool and still? What is it that GM can't build? Electric cars or biodiesels, grease cars.
They won't.
They won't if they are left in their current state.
True. Yes. Oh, I agree. I mean, well, what are we talking about? What are these big three? Are they just a badge? Is that all they are? Are they just a badge?
No, that's the thing that gets me is there are thousands and thousands and thousands of working Americans who are paying taxes, who are paying into Social Security.
City right next to me. There's the Cummings filtration plant, which they make all the catalytic converters and all that other stuff, and then there's another, I forget what they make, but they do some sort of bearings or whatever else they make. Why can't they retool? Why can't they do this? Why can't we? What are we doing? Are we wasting our time for?
And that's where the question about the function of government comes in. We already know that the right wing is out there screaming, "Let them die," because blaming the unions for the fact that they have failed. But so with that in mind, why? I mean, okay. Let me image wise. Why do we want to do with the auto industry? And I'm not saying we, us, but why is it permissible to do with the auto industry what George Bush did with the Gulf Coast and Katrina? There is, and my argument here is that there is a place for government. And the place for, you know, government's not the gumball machine or the Cracker Jack box for corporate America. I don't believe that. No, not even a little bit. But what we can be, what it can be is a guiding force. It can be a nurturing force. It can be a philosophical force. So that we say, you know, okay, so we bail your ass out. Well, here's the price. And then having done that, if they go down, they can say, too many strings attached, man. You know, we're going to keep on pumping out gas guzzlers. We're, you know, Chrysler and Cerberus, you know, Cerberus Holdings with Dan Quayle sitting in his little corner office there can say, there's not enough in it for us. And then they can die. And everyone will know why they died. On the other hand, Albert, we can look at them and we can say, you're going to get serious about hybrids. You're going to get serious about the biodiesel technology. And you're going to get serious about your wage structure. And then buying into that, they can be saved, and we can do things. We can retool that plant near your house.
But well, it's the city of Janesville. See, that plant is shutting down completely. You know, so they're already shutting down. You know, they want to retool. That's one thing. I mean, but there has to be a complete new paradigm shift. I'm not trying, you know, like one other thing. I'm not trying to say we should do like Bush. I'm not trying to say that. You know, I'm saying let them die. That doesn't mean we take everybody out and suddenly execute them. That doesn't mean we sit there and say, okay, there is a vacuum going to be there, and there needs to be a vacuum. These people have lost their way. They're addicts, and they need to be punished. Okay, not the workers. Of course not the workers. I'm talking about these people that steer these companies. Okay, that steer these companies off the cliff. They need to be punished. They're going to get their golden parachutes. You know that's what they're going to get. You know that, which is going to be the same crap that's going on with Wall Street. Okay, stuff is such an illusion, and it just drives me up. I'm freaking beside myself.
That's like the hearing that Dennis Kucinich held on Friday, and did such a magnificent job with that Neil Kashkari guy. You know, I found it interesting, Albert. We talked about Neil Kashkari before Neil Kashkari was even a blip on the for-profit-only media's radar.
Mm-hmm.
And we pointed out the fact that this guy was a shill and a flunky and put there for a very specific purpose. He had absolutely no experience whatsoever in the field in which he was being assigned. He was just another of the Hank Paulson's little creatures from Goldman Sachs.
Yep, little minion.
Yeah, a little lick spit, a little toady. And Dennis Kucinich reduced him to about 2 inches tall on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because the bailout, the financial sector bailout, is going horribly. You know, AI, how many times has AIG rubbed our face in it now? Three? Four?
Three. I've counted three. Maybe four. Maybe. Who knows? That's the thing. Who knows?
That we know of.
They take our money and pay extra, so the people that are throwing their little parties don't say nothing.
So what happens is that, you know, among other things, you get all this money just thrown around that's doing none of what it would. I mean, my God, Paulson came out the other day and said, well, we're not going to buy any toxic assets after all. We've decided that's not what we want to do with all this money. Well, damn, that's what the legislation was passed for. If you don't want to do it, give the money back and we'll redo the legislation. Because we got Iraq on that in the first law. Oh, the sky is falling. It's going to come apart. Blah, 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 blah. It'll melt down. Blah. Well, market ain't healthy. It goes up 500 and down 7 on any given day. That's not the sign of a healthy market. A healthy market just makes little stair-step incremental things, because anything else is some sort of W.C. Fields scam.
Yep.
It's, you know, grifting.
Anyway.
Yeah, flim-flam. It's flim-flam.
It is. It always is.
And all of this is because it was done to us in such a way that we had no input. So, you know, maybe there's a lesson learned out of it with the automakers. You know, what you say, I agree with insofar as the leadership has got to go. The design team, the marketing department. Dear God, the marketing department at General Motors and Ford and Chrysler has got to go. No more Chrysler needle dicks going down the road with a Celine Dion soundtrack in the background singing "I Drove All Night." No more.
You remember what the Holy Prophet Bill Hicks, may peace be upon him, said about marketers?
Help me. I know, but
he was a brilliant, brilliant prophet. He gave us all sorts of warning for all this kind of crap. And, you know, I just got to reemphasize that, and I know it's going to happen. I know it's going to be. I know they're going to get the bailout and this and this and that, and nothing's going to change. It's going to be the same garbage, and it's going to be, you know, I hope I'm wrong, but I can see that. I can see this happening. They'll get the bailout. They're not going to change, Bob. They're going to get the same crap that they're doing with the Wall Street bailout, and we're going to sit there and continue to take it, and then they're going to add some more illusionary money until we get to such a point that, I mean, where the hell are we going with this? I mean, I don't, you know, not for nothing, I want my kids to have a future.
Yeah. I'm the same way.
Yeah. GM is not a future. What they do, how they do it, and what they're building is nothing in terms of future. Okay? I mean, we literally need a completely new paradigm shift. You know, let a new company come up to be. Let Tesla.
Well, maybe, and maybe that's what happens.
Well, I hope so. Let the guys say, hey, you know, you guys have good ideas. You don't quite have the capital, this and this and that. Here, we're gonna let you loose. I don't even know what we can say. No, we can say in terms of that's going to make a change. All I know is throwing money at this. You know, they talk about throwing money at problems, and then they take money away from problems that really could use some money. We throw money at the people who have all the money. They don't need any more money. They got all the money. Maybe they should sell one of their houses. Maybe they should downgrade. You don't know who the hell needs 9,000 square feet. Who needs 15 cars or 13 houses that are 9,000 square feet? Who needs this? You know, maybe we should downgrade. Maybe we should sit there and stop living on this credit. You know, we should stop leasing our lives and leasing our planet. You know, I mean, God, we're freaking doomed, okay? We're doomed when we let this kind of thinking go. Oh, no, what are we going to do when GM goes away? What are we going to do when the species goes away? Okay?
Sure, what are we going to do when America goes away? We're talking about...
The thinking that got us here is never going to get us out. We need a whole new way. We're lost in the wilderness here, okay? And we're thinking like, you know, and I mean, I'm not trying to say, you know, we should just completely, you know, kill all the rich and this and that. I'm not trying to say that, you know. But at the same time, I am saying that the direction that they've been taking us in is wrong. And it's wrong on 15 million fronts. And if we had 1,000 billion hours to discuss it, you know, not.
Oh, I love the thinking that this is engendering, though, Albert. I've got a note here from our pal Reverbo, our critic at large. He says, he said there's another reason. Actually, it's titled "There's Another Reason, Big Boy." It's the same reason American men walk around in those ridiculous culottes. It's big clothes and big cars for big asses. Europe is trim and smart, and their products and thinking reflect that. Over here, I guess some of us are still pretending every place is California in 1965. The wide track for wide people. This country needs to go on a diet, and when you're done with them cheeseburgers, just chuck your trash out the window. Nope, lost Albert. Dadgummit. I hate it when that happens. That's true. That's true. This country does need to go on a diet. Dear God, have you seen this story out with the rankings of America's healthiest and least healthy city? Looks like we done at West Virginia done went and beat Arkansas and Mississippi. The unhealthiest city in America is, drumroll please, Huntington, West Virginia. Really. The healthiest city in America is Burlington, Vermont. Huntington's median age is 40. Burlington's is 38. Burlington's obesity rate is somewhere around 8%. Huntington's is 20. These things don't happen in a vacuum. These things are very, very real. Let's see. The national average, Huntington's obesity percentage is far larger than the national average. Huntington leads in a half a dozen other illness measures, too, according to the Associated Press, including heart disease and diabetes. It's even tops in the percentage of elderly people who have lost all their teeth, 50%. Huntington has a hot dog festival. Really. heart attacks. And no, this shouldn't say Huntington. It should say West Virginia, because that's how it is here. And by the way, if that was our phone system screwing up, ring back in out any time. Burlington, Vermont? Well, they've got a little a lifestyle that's literally, and I'm not trying to use a pun here, literally a little bit lighter. A little bit lighter on the planet. Oh, Albert's hit it out. There's, oh God, the irony of this program. Stupid batteries. We need new phones in this house, he says. My next one's going to have a cord. Dumb batteries. And yeah, we need a major diet. So our electric vehicle's batteries last longer. Thanks, Albert. Oh. No, but let's see. Let's see if I can dredge up. I had it here. Dig up a little bit more info on Burlington, Vermont, sitting there on beautiful Lake Champlain. Yeah, there it is. But seriously, Huntington has a hot dog festival. That's like, oh no, I'm not going to say that. That's just bad. No, okay, there's the statistic that I got wrong. 8% of Burlington's residents live at the poverty level. 19% of the residents of Huntington, West Virginia are in poverty. Burlington, 40% of area residents have at least a college bachelor's degree. It's only 15% in Huntington. Both of them are college towns. Now, I'm working towards something here. Just be patient. In Burlington, people bicycle and hike and ski. There's fun stuff to do out on the water, out on the lake. They have neighborhood groups that work on parks, that build community gardens and landscape, fix sidewalks. Yeah, there's pizza. It's a college town. There's going to be pizza anywhere. But in Burlington, you can get, if you want meat, you can get grass-fed beef. Beef that hasn't been, you know, Arnoldized with a bunch of damn hormones and antibiotics and stood up to its kneecaps in feces while it waits for the slaughter. Not in Huntington. If you want to go eat vegan one day, I don't mean be a vegan, just eat vegan. We had to... We had a delicious pan of tofu lasagna here last night. I'm trying to work against the grain of all of this stuff that works against me and mine here in the hills. Because, as I've said before, I could take you out the road from the fabulous mansion here, and I could show you the graves of my forebears. And they lived into their 80s, and they lived into their 90s, and they lived pretty hale and hearty up to the end. And they worked their asses off all their life. They were farmers, that side of my family. And they ate pig meat, and they ate sausage, and they ate, yeah, bring me some more grease and gravy, Ma. But then they went out into the fields and worked like dogs and we're able to tolerate it. I, on the other hand, sit on my ass and keep eating like that and wonder, why am I just blowing up like something out of Willy Wonka? Well, there's an answer. In both instances, Huntington, West Virginia, and Burlington, Vermont, both have a predominantly German and Scots-Irish population. Both of them are about 40,000 in population. And yet one is manifestly more healthy than the other. One is on a road to sustainability and a healthy lifestyle, and the other continues down a path of death and destruction. And you have to ask the question, why? On the one hand, our good friend Tony Seaton of Seaton Notes sent the article along to me last night, and he and I had a nice email exchange. He sent the story about Huntington along to me. And I read it, and I thought, wow. And then I saw the story about Burlington, Vermont, our polar opposite. Let me throw another one in there for you. Both of them are cities of 40,000. Both of them are populations that are largely white, Scots, Irish, and German. Both of them sit in the Appalachian Mountains. And yet in the story about Huntington, Mayor Fellington of Huntington said, I've never seen so many places that are hot dog oriented. I guess it's a cultural thing. Appalachian. No. No, Mayor. And no disrespect intended. It's not an Appalachian thing. It's a slave thing, Mayor. Because at the end of the day, the final analysis of why two so similarly situated small cities in America could be so radically different one from the other in terms of health, well, there's one answer. The most hateful four-letter word in the English language I've just about come to conclude. There is one four-letter word that separates Huntington, West Virginia, from Burlington, Vermont. And I don't have to tell you what that four-letter word is, but I will anyway. Huntington has something, or is near something, that is not within miles of Burlington, Vermont. A plague stalks the land in Huntington and the rest of West Virginia that does not stalk New England. There are lots of four-letter words that I couldn't say on terrestrial radio without fear of being handed a big old honking fine. Both me and the station who carried me and the network even, and every station that carried it when I said one of those four-letter words. And yet there is a four-letter word that is uttered every day on terrestrial radio stations and television stations, carried on internet websites, and carried on cable news networks across this country. And we do not recognize it for the obscenity that it is. That word which separates Huntington, West Virginia, so starkly from Burlington, Vermont, is coal. C-O-A-L. Another word for grim, mordant death. Another word for poison. Another word for early heart disease. Another word for cancer. Another word for mercury-induced madness. Coal. C-O-A-L. And Huntington has a hot dog festival because hot dogs are po-folks food, and they developed it, and people in West Virginia have developed a passion for the hot dog because hot dogs are all we had to eat during the heyday of coal. Just like Spam is treated as a delicacy of sorts in Hawaii, because during the Second World War, it was the only thing passing for meat that was available for the locals to eat, and still they eat that poisonous stuff. And treat it as something wonderful. Oh, by the way, I mentioned at the top of the program our buddies Wally and Dookie over at MorningConstitution.com. They noted something. I wanted to make sure I shared it with you this evening. The economy is in tatters for millions of people. The future is uncertain. But for some employees at the Hormel Foods Corporation in Austin, Minnesota, times have never been better. They're working at a furious pace, double shifts, triple shifts, piling up all the overtime they want because what they make is spam. Spiced pork, ham, and fat ground together and molded into a gelatinous wad and shoved into a can and passing for meat in hard times. In a sign of the times, Hormel is cranking out as much spam as its workers can produce. They've been going 7 days a week on two shifts since July. The workers there have been told that there is no sign of let-up, and they will make spam and pour spam into the American commerce stream for the foreseeable future. What did I say we had for dinner last night here? Yeah, tofu lasagna. What's cheaper? A brick of tofu or a brick of spam? Here, animal rights people, which has less cruelty attached to it? Can you still hear the soybeans scream, Clarice? No, you can't. More protein, less fat, and less cost in that tub of tofu, silken, firm, or extra firm, depending on what you like, and it will take on the flavor of anything you cook it with. From tofu lasagna to tofu chili to tofu burritos to tofu scrambled eggs, tofurkey. That just sounds obscene. But I go into my great big giant Kroger, and there's three or four rows of spam, 12 tins deep. I have to ask where the tofu is. And then one of those wonderful union folks says, "You eat tofu?" "Yeah. I tried some of that. Wasn't too bad. Kind of liked it." And you realize that there's a little bit of hope. But Kroger is still moving a hell of a lot more spam than they are tofu. And the stuff you can do with it? David in Tennessee is quite the gourmand. And we swap recipes every now and then. He was the one that put me on to the tofu lasagna. And it was a huge hit. And it was as substantial as any lasagna I've ever had. It was delicious. And he sent along another one for grilled tofu burritos that I'm going to get all over. I'm going to reciprocate by sharing out my creamy tofu Thai dip. Woo! Yeah, good stuff. And I've turned my kids on to tofu smoothies. Ice. Used a little plain yogurt. Yeah, some sugar. Some pineapples, some mandarin oranges. And some of that silken tofu that blends real smooth and creamy. And you know what? It was delicious. And they want another one. And I'm okay with that. I'll give them all they want. Because I know that it's about 8,000 miles ahead of going over to the local Wendy's and getting that fat-laden vegetable oil sort of milk product goopy thing they call a Frosty. But see, you can, you probably don't get the funny looks in Burlington, Vermont if you say, "I had tofu lasagna last night." You get somebody who goes, You did? Oh, we had that last week. Pretty good, eh? I don't know, maybe. Whatever the accent is. You say that in Huntington, West Virginia? Tofu. Sounds like that stuff I clean out while I clean out from my shoes. That's disgusting. Said to you by someone off of whose circulatory system you could probably bounce a nickel from the heartening. Cole, one reason and one reason only for the vast difference between Burlington, Vermont and Huntington, West Virginia. No coal under those beautiful Appalachian hills in Vermont that sit surrounding Lake Champlain. No coal there. But us, well, the coal barons of England and New York and Pennsylvania look at West Virginia and say, what's our coal doing under the land? And the answer is generations of obesity, heart disease, lung disease, circulatory disease, cancers of the stomach, cancers of the lung, cancers of the brain, cancers of everything. Because when you bring coal up out of the ground, death comes with it. Oh, and by the way, but Bob, there's another thing that set them up there apart from the good folks down south. Them Yankees up there in whatever state that Burlington town is in, they're secular humanists going to hell. They love gays and gay marriage, and they vote for different people like that Arab Hussein Obama. Good folks in Huntington are just getting to heaven sooner, praise Jeebus. Oh, David, whatever will we do with you? But God, there's truth in it, there's truth. On the one hand, you have, what is it? Is it Wayne could be of some help on this. It's the University of Vermont's at Burlington, isn't it? Huntington has Marshall University. Marshall University has been offered and likely will get a brand new, shiny, phony intellectual center for declaring the magical marvels of Ayn Rand's twisted economic personal philosophy. I'm guessing there isn't one of those in Burlington. There are endowed professor chairs of coal at Marshall University. I'm guessing there aren't any in Burlington. And, you know, degree for degree, cold is cold. And Burlington, Vermont is probably freezing-ass cold. What did Wayne tell me one time? In Vermont, there's two seasons, dead of winter and two summers of bad sledding. But that photograph I saw looked pretty doggone pretty. And frankly, when the wind howls off the toxic, poisoned Ohio River and the and near the confluence with the Big Sandy that's had all the filth and grime and goop and nastiness dumped in it by Ashland Oil there. When the wind blows that at you in February, the difference between the cold of Burlington, Vermont, and the cold of Huntington, West Virginia is a distinction without a difference. Yeah. Email in from our pal Marty. Bob, I utterly hate tofu. Don't like spam too much either, but given a choice between those two and starving, bring on the spam. I know. But I'm trying to create some lifestyle changes here. trying to at least help my family to see another way. Because if we don't, we are literally just another statistic. That's all. Another one of those people that is talked about in news reports when the question is put, what's wrong with West Virginia? Why are those people that way? And I've read every article today that I could find about this study, the healthiest and least healthy cities in America. And I will tell you that if you're listening to this program, you're listening to the only person who has mentioned as part of the as some significant part of that reason, coal. Because the fiends of coal have tons and tons of money that they dump into sleazy PR campaigns. I saw a beautiful essay the other day. The fiends of coal sponsor athletic tournaments in West Virginia. You know, high school athletic tournaments. Soccer, football, whatever. And somebody asked the question of the Secondary Schools Activities Commission, would you accept a sponsorship of one of these tournaments? Would you accept one from a tobacco company? Well, hell no! Would you accept it from a liquor company? Well, no! Why would we want to do that with one of our children's tournaments? Then why are you accepting the sponsorship of organizations that are directly involved with poisoning the children in those tournaments? In the heat of their athletic exertion, the breaths that they take so quickly and deeply into their lungs are poisoned with the filth of coal. But it's okay because we got $15,000 to sponsor the tournament from the Friends of Coal, and maybe Don Nealon will come down here and sign some autographs. Hot diggity. Then we can go over to the hot dog festival. Yee-wee! Dang, we living. But only here, only on the horn, only on conversation radio, only on America's liberal voice, will you hear it said plainly and honestly that the reason that Huntington and the rest of West Virginia are as sick as they are as obese as we are as diabetic as we are, is because of the slave mentality forced upon us by coal. We'll take a little break and come back. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Some distant callers. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95?
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Yeah, a little ahead of the curve on hour three, but what the heck, 6 minutes before 8 p.m. here on the East Coast. And, you know, I love it when we get to the food porn portion of the program. Nanette in the chat room just put up a link to this killer-looking hot and sour soup recipe. First serious snow's blowing around outside the studio of season this year. And seeing that soup recipe just makes me think, yeah, that would be perfect about now. Might actually get some accumulation tonight. Not sure. It's kind of pretty to see it start. You know, snow's pretty the first two or three times you see it. When it's snowing in April, though, that's when I get a little bit testy. But I did notice that, you know, one of those old farmers kind of things. I noticed that all the hornets' nests are way the heck up in the trees around here, and that's usually a sign of going to get some snow. And so we may indeed. Let's go to the phones. Our good buddy Ed is with us. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you. I was going to tell you, first of all, last week, probably about three times, tried two different numbers there. You were breaking up so bad. I guess somebody finally called you and told you that you were breaking up and even going off the air. Or yep. Over here you were, anyway. So I don't know what was going on, but I was going to tell you maybe you had a loose connection there or something.
Nah, we've had some connectivity troubles with our internet service lately, but supposedly that's going to be fixed once and for all this week. Cross your fingers.
You're talking about snow. We've had quite a bit of snowfall. I got about probably 2-3 inches laying on the truck. So it's sticking here on this riverfront, but usually that's the way it is. We won't have any in Oak Hill. We'll have 2 inches. For the people know, that's a little town, close to where you live.
Yeah.
And,
Well, and it's always, up the road from us as you, head towards Sewell and stuff on US 60, those people can get a foot, and we'll have 3 inches down here.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's the difference in 1,000 feet elevation.
Well, I've seen it 5 miles from here, Oak Hill would be flooding, raining, and we didn't get a drop out here. You're talking about 5 miles difference, so I guess there's a cutoff for everything, ain't there?
Well, yeah, and it's just, this season of the year, it's kind of unusual to have it this early, really, of any substance. I mean, to have a little fly here and there, a little flurry, a little this and that. But it's kind of unusual to see it coming down this early. Haven't seen that in probably 10, 15 years now.
Yeah, well, I had one of my worst wrecks on October 7th, around 1970, something like that. We used to have snows and cold weather. It started the 1st of October.
Way back when my parents were young, you know, the 1st of October was hog killing time.
Mm-hmm. So it's this global warming, I think, has definitely got a hold on that. But I wanted to address a couple questions and comments. I noticed today that this Sanchez on CNN.
Yeah, Rick Sanchez.
Yeah, he had to make the comment that this 30 and out that the UAW has got had to be changed, that there wasn't no sense in nobody going to work at 18 and retiring at 48. And I thought, you know, wonder what you make. Wonder when you'll retire, and what do you know about it? You know, how deep has he studied that it's job creation for other people's going to be working there, plus new taxes. But this thing that UAW is doing is a good lick breaking. And, you know, and I'm speaking as a UAW member, ex-UAW member. This thing, part of it is about breaking the union, buying these jobs out and weakening it, just like they have the food store workers union.
Well, and that's, you know, the Republicans would not like nothing better than to kill the UAW once and for all.
Oh, yeah, because it, along with coal mines, was the initial, went through a stage of violence. They shot Walter Reuther and beat him half to death and threw him over behind a machine at one of the plants way back in the 60s. And that shows you what they think. Plus, you got to have Flint, Michigan, and Pontiac. In those places, it was born with a lot of blood of the American worker.
Sure it was. And, of course, the Reuther brothers were West Virginia boys.
Mm-hmm. Well, you best, and not speaking for myself, but the best union men in the UAW have come out of West Virginia, your health directors and stuff like that. And now we got a bunch of sots, wine heads, and
well, you got to wonder what Walter Reuther would think looking at this situation right now, Ed.
He probably wonder where they moved the union.
What do you mean?
He probably figured he took it to Mexico or somewhere, because it certainly isn't like he left it. He's a long way from the way he left it. So. And they've made progress in certain areas, but that's what part of this is all about now.
Well, I tell you what, you bring up that business with Rick Sanchez, and that just gags your gut, doesn't it? Yeah,
I don't like him to start with. He's, as far as I'm concerned, he's pretty much right. You know, he's right wing, and I don't have any use for him. He's rude. You'd be talking, or you know, listen to the people call in there. He cuts them off. Wait a minute, you know, and I mean, he's worse than old Nancy Grace or whatever her name is.
Oh, yeah, and, I despise her.
You know, I despise both of them. But I guess a lot of people like him, or he wouldn't be on there. But I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No, you know, you're not interrupting anything, because I want to... I'm glad you mentioned that, especially this comment by Rick Sanchez, because see, I've got this notion that the purpose of a working American is not to work until they drop dead. I've got this notion that if you can start at 18 and you can retire at 48, I say more power to you, because that gives you the rest of your life to go and do something different.
And you should have made enough money with the wages they're making. But you know what they want to do to us, see? I've said it all along. They want to take us back to China and Hanoi, where a woman works on the highway and drops her baby and keeps on working. Now, that's the Republican Party would like to head with us, is back. They're not going to come up with us. They're wanting us to go back to where they are. So, but that 30 and out, a lot of people has sacrificed a lot to get to that. And it's always the worker. They dump it back on the worker every time. Not only through these, which I'm totally against, bailing out. And I'm talking about, I was with the UAW and a leader in it for one of the plants for a long time, along with organizing. And I'm against this bailout. We bailed out Chrysler. Probably, you was probably too young to remember that.
No, I remember when it happened.
But look where they're at again. You know, and it's not the worker. The worker's been there, and they got their assembly lines as one of the best systems probably that you can get. But when you got the management and the stockholders, wonder what the stockholders are going to give up.
Well, see, and that's the point, isn't it? What are the stockholders going to give up? What are the brass going to give up?
Yeah, what's the CEOs and all these drones that's sitting around, some of these keepers, and some of their high-priced might as well be call girls. And I've seen this stuff in action when we'd go to our seminars and stuff. There wasn't nothing for some of them to come to there to meet some of the people in the UAW even, thinking they could get a better hold on. So I don't have any sympathy except for the worker. And let me tell you, they've had plenty of warning, Bob, on what's coming. And they can holler that the people wants this and the people wants this type of thing, or we wouldn't be putting them out. Now, I do agree that we can contribute a little bit of it to these big old SUVs and stuff like that, these gas guzzlers, as part of the problem. But they can't dump all this back on the worker.
You mark my words, Ed, the Republican Party will try to, and all these conservative think tanks. I had that essay at the beginning of the program from the guy who said the Detroit's problem is obviously the bloated big union contracts.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? It's not the fact that they design and build and put onto the market vehicles that can't compete with Japanese and German?
Right. And let me tell you, the company I worked for that moved, I think is completely broken up now, owned by the Pritchard brothers, who owned Brenner Fairline, White Horse Glove, and Armadillo Gear, and Hyatt Regencies, a lot of resort stuff. From Little Long Air Docks in Oak Hill, they made $50 million, and you can look it up in Standard & Poor's or whatever, and they moved over basically what would have been about a 30-cent thing, and that gave I know they had a conversation, how much do we owe the government? What's our taxes? And they said, well, every time we count depreciation, count this, we won't owe them nothing. And a fellow named Jones that worked for Pritchard Brothers said, give them $1 million. What we asked for wouldn't have cost nothing close to that. So that's what they think. You know, and you know the reason that is, Bob, the reason they don't want to give it to the worker is because they're afraid the worker will take off on a Friday or Monday. They want them tied to their plant.
Yeah, because a desperate worker is
a faithful worker.
Yeah. Sure.
I know what the score was. I knew what it was then, but I didn't bother to tell the men that because of what could happen, because we were militant enough, I think, maybe, I'm not sure, the way it was. But I want to, if we're through with that conversation, I want to ask you a question.
Well, I wanted to let you know we just got an email in, Ed. Before we go there, don't forget your question. But our buddy Brandon up in New York He says, the caller you're talking to right now, he read my mind about that Rick Sanchez creep. How dare this creep on CNN take an anti-union position? Now it's the union's fault Big Auto's in trouble. This is the new angle for the right wing nuts. Blame the unions. Concessions, concessions. You can see it coming. Say on, brother. Rick is a right wing creep. And no, he's not popular. He's just another right wing mouthpiece that's being propped up by CNN. So, yeah, you hit it. You hit that nail on the head, Ed.
Well, and you know what? Old Situation Room fella there, Walt Switzner, is not, he would do more in that area if he thought he could get away with it and wouldn't lose the.
Yeah, well, and he does enough, though. I mean,
he walks the line. But he's like Joe Lieberman, ain't he?
Yeah, he's exactly like Joe Lieberman. He's a weasel.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of which, I guess Joe Lieberman's going to get to keep his job, and that gags me.
Well, he won't get to keep all of it, I believe. He'll lose that sub-chairman of the of one of the committees. Maybe both of them. It ain't over yet.
I'm looking at a story here. Senate Democratic leadership expected to allow Lieberman to keep Homeland Security chairmanship.
Yeah. But see, he's got another, he's a sub-chairman or...
Environment and Public Works sub-chair, right. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, he's going to lose that. I mean, they absolutely can't let him go with all that stuff. And I'm not sure that where he would be on a vote anyway. I'm not sure. I wouldn't say put him in the can. But I really believe that Connecticut will do it, get him next time.
Yeah, but 2012 is a long way off.
Yeah, I know it.
Yeah, but this is his last term, and I think he knows it.
Yeah, he even looks like a weasel. You know, he's a creep from the word go. But I want to ask you, when this oil started, when the gas started up, and it was... $50-some a barrel, which it really wasn't a barrel. It was a barrel that we consider 55 gallons. Those barrels of oil are 42 gallons. What was the price of that oil when it was $1.75?
Oh, golly, I don't know.
I think it was $58 a barrel.
That sounds about right.
And
I know it was $20-some a barrel when Bill Clinton left office.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you can go to other states right now, and gas is as low as $1.69. I'll be going to North Carolina. I'm going to find out what it is there. And Monday, I'll be going to Richmond, Virginia. And at Fuel City, it's always 20 cents less than what it is here, always.
Well, you got to remember, West Virginia taxes the daylights out of its fuel because, God forbid, we should actually make the coal companies pay for what they're doing to us. You know, that was set up by a boondoggle constitutional amendment back in the 80s. So instead, you know, we've got a pop tax and cigarette tax, and we've got gasoline taxes. Anything we can get out of working people, we'll get out of them in order to keep from having to actually tell coal to pay up.
Agreed. But the fact, though, of it is, at when it was $1.75, those same taxes were still on it. So it should have, you know, this our gas should have done already dropped the way I've got it figured anyway. Proportionately, it should have dropped to $1.85 already, at least that low. And I still think we should be boycotting different stations for about 10 days apiece, see if they can gas. And
well, you know, I talked to one of these real, real good mechanic around here, and he had a gas station, and he quit selling gas. Because, and then I noticed it one day when I was asking a car question, and he said, you know, I had to. He said, I was getting killed on it because there's really very little in the way of a profit margin for somebody running a station. Because they're getting the gouge just as hard from their suppliers. The problem lies in the boardrooms of Exxon and Chevron and Royal Dutch Shell and BP. These are the people who are taking all the profits because they're not passing that stuff downhill. And, you know, every quarter you'll see a news story come out, Ed, that says ExxonMobil declares largest profit in world history. You've seen them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, those profits don't go downhill to their station owners. Those profits go into those quarterly profit and loss statements, those quarterly stock dividends that David was talking about when he wrote in from Tennessee. It's the 90-day wonder. It's the 90-day miracle, the 90-day cycle. Money, 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 greed, 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 greed. But well, they keep it to themselves.
Yeah. Well, you have four distributors, and I'm not sure if that's throughout West Virginia, but I know you have four distributors in this, what I call the local area, in a 100-mile radius. A woman that heads this thing up. And if McGraw hadn't come up here and addressed the situation on gas, he would not have won this election that the Chamber of Commerce put so much money toward.
Yep.
And right away, I'm talking about within just a couple of days, gas dropped 16 cents a gallon, and it didn't start dropping until quite a while after that, you know, steady. We talked about putting information picket lines up around the different stations at different locations and different stations for 10 days at a time and let them get the picture. And as far as I'm concerned, still should do it, except it's a sort of a bad time of the year to do it.
Yeah.
But if that gas don't go down, and I'm talking about going down, within 15 or 20 cents of what it is. Somebody said Parkersburg had it below $2 right now. So I'd say if they don't come down to that, and that's still the way I've got it figured, 15 cents a gallon higher than what it was when it was this price before. In fact, I don't know what the price of gas is. I think it's below $58 a gallon. If I'm not mistaken.
Barrel, you mean? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So gas should be below a dollar, should be below $1.75 a gallon here in this state. But I'm going to get off of that. I can't get, they're not doing us any big favor the way it is. And if that guy that you're talked about, it was the profit of margin profit or whatever, was that low, he was probably an independent. And what they try to do is drive the independents out of business. All they do is just jack up the price on them, and then they have to sell it for that. And he's right. Their profit margin is smaller.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on there.
Well, I tell you what, we've got a situation coming at us, Ed. I fully expect to see gas prices start going up again. And I expect it to happen in January because I expect it. This is pure manipulation. This is manipulation of the people. You know, we were getting a price break on gasoline because Exxon wanted John McCain elected.
Mm-hmm.
And we also got a price break on gasoline so that the right wing could come out with those stupid, stupid talking points that only an utter fool or moron would buy into. Say, well, see, they're talking about drilling offshore, and it's already driving the prices of gas down.
Uh-huh.
Those people are idiots.
Yeah, and another one, we're sending our boys into the, I guess there's not a whole lot of harm's way, and patrolling that coast over there where they got that tanker right now.
Yep.
And what are we going to get out of it? Those Saudis are not going to give us a break.
No, we're not going to send them a bill either.
No. And, you know, I'm telling you, it ain't no small price tag to run those destroyers. And that's what most of those things are, is destroyer escorts and destroyers that are in that area. And I don't know how many of them. They haven't put that out. But to think that we're protecting them while they're ripping us off, it's it's as bad as some of the other things, like sending Iraq money while they got billions themselves.
I know. And hopefully some of that comes to an end. You know, the Bush administration, Ed, said that this measure passed by the Iraqi parliament saying that, United States got to get out by 2011. White House said today, well, that's an aspirational goal. Horse feathers, it's their law. They have told us we're getting out.
Well, if George Bush was in there, I seriously doubt it. But, that would be a perfect out, that they run us out. And let them do what they're going to do to each other, Bob. I don't like to see dictators, but it's still...
It's their country.
Yeah, and it's up to their people how they handle people like that. And there's a lot of people for hire that'll take care of most of their problems.
Well, I reckon you're pretty much right.
So, but anyway, I just wanted to call in on those items. But let me ask you something. Why are we running the space programs and stuff that we're running? Why are we doing that? Why are we shooting that money out into space like we're doing when the economic situation is like it is here? Can you answer that?
Well, first of all, the NASA budget, Ed, is minuscule compared to some of the other things that suck up our tax dollars. We give more in corporate welfare to the coal industry than we spend on our space program. There's a lot to be learned out there, and of course I was born along with the space program, so I grew up idolizing astronauts and rockets and things like that. I think there's a place for it. India just landed a robot probe on the moon. India, Ed, India. I found that just a little bit not well. Doggone it, we have to have something in the way of goals, and I believe that there is value in space. Most of the technology that we use today has some direct back reference to the fact that we had a viable space program, and so we're not spending that much on it. I mean, if we were out there, trying to put a man on the moon in 10 years or something like that, I might be more inclined to debate it. But right now, as compared with the money that we've thrown down a rat hole on Wall Street, we've had, let's put it this way, AIG and various and sundry other Wall Street outfits have stolen more money from the American people through this bailout than we'll probably spend on NASA in 5 years.
Well, I know that we got the Pentagon, and I saw where you can buy the same screw here, 19 cents. They pay $1.35 for it. Claw hammers, $35. And this type of stuff, plus the contractors that go through millions of dollars in excess. And it comes back to the middle class, who they're destroying. They're destroying the middle class, the people that absolutely, the bunch of parasites is on back.
Yeah,
it's very disturbing.
Well, and that's because in the defense industry, you're talking about profiteers, un-American, unpatriotic profiteers. And that's why you wind up with, $1.98, 19 cent screws and $35 hammers.
Mm-hmm.
That's profiteering.
Yeah, and kickbacks involved with it, probably.
Sure.
But I want to come make some calls tomorrow to the representatives for all the good it'll do, because they already made up their mind what they're going to do, no matter how many calls are made. And they showed that by the way they come out and endorsed and made the endorsements before they found out how West Virginia felt. The people.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
No, I do. I do. Yeah, Rockefeller and Ray Hall and the friends of coal crowd came out and lined up behind Obama.
Mm-hmm. And that was before they found out what West Virginians wanted. But I'm not sorry for that, because I after seeing how he is, as much as I was for Hillary, I may be just a nudge ahead of that. Obama at first, he'd done several things I didn't like. But I wound up now, and I realized that he's really got a burden for the United States. After he come out of that meeting, I don't know what he really thought, as brilliant as he is, that he was going to do or that he could do. But after he had that meeting, did you know those dark bags that was under his eyes?
Yep.
They must have unloaded so much heavy stuff on him that he realized he had a heck of a job facing him. He better surround himself with some good people, because if you give me that job for $1 million, I'd work 2 days and say, where's the vice president? And that's how strong I feel about that. I wouldn't have no part of it. It's not saying that I would know how. It's not saying I wouldn't. Because I think ignorance got us into this, and only good common sense and brilliance is going to bring us out of it.
And it has to happen in such a way that the person trying to do it doesn't have his hands tied. And those no-good SOBs in the Bush administration have done and are doing everything they possibly can, Ed, to make sure that Barack Obama cannot affect the change that is needed to save this nation.
They're not going to be able to do it, though. They thought they'd wait to the last minute and do some and as Bill Maher said it, he said it's not too late for Bush to pull one more bunner before he gets out.
No.
And it's not. But it's at least they let a time limit run out on something. I can't.
Well, somebody just needs to give George Bush a pretzel and tell him to go sit quietly for the next 63 days.
Yeah, I'd like to give him a pretzel. Well, love to. But
yeah, go sit with the dog for a while, George. Well, Ed, it's awful good hearing from you. You want me to leave you on hold?
No, I'm going to have to wait. It's time for Dreamer to call anyway.
All right. Well, you tell her we said hello, okay?
And tell all of yours. And I probably won't get talked to for Thanksgiving this weekend, right?
No, it's a week from Thursday.
Time don't mean too much when you're retired, Bob.
Yeah, but see, you got to retire. That's the beauty of it.
Well, tell you what, I thought that, boy, I'll have a ball when I retire. But believe me, it ain't like that. But you got it. Time don't change at all. It just keeps rolling. And I enjoyed your program, enjoyed the conversation, enjoyed the information, and especially the backing of whoever emailed you, and in sync with me on that. And I'll talk to you again soon.
All right. We'll talk soon, Ed. You take care and travel safe.
Yes, sir.
All right. Bye now.
Good night.
That's our buddy Ed here in Fayette County. Well, a lot of good questions that very much need answered, and I don't know if we're going to get it. I'm going to go right back to the phones in a second, but I got to just throw something out there your way just for your contemplation. You know what the G20 is, right? The group of 20? There's 7 and there's 20 of this. Well, you know what the G20 is. China's a member. We're a member. Since you do know what the G20 is, the group of 20, congratulations. You're ahead of George W. Bush. There are 63 days left in his administration, and that is 63 days worth of opportunities for him to display his stunning, continuing ignorance. If you are a listener to John Fox's All Foxed Up on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern here on the Horn, and if you're not, why aren't you? You'll know that John is in Australia and that John talks about the new prime minister down there from time to time, a gentleman by the name of Kevin Rudd. Well, last month, Kevin Rudd had a phone conversation with George W. Bush about the global financial crisis. And George said, well, I think we need to handle it through the G7 framework. And Kevin Rudd just told him it was that he was out of touch and it made no sense to take action on the crisis without engaging China. And that the response to the global financial crisis should be done through the G20. Right? Now, this is the quote. Right here, this is the quote from the Australian News. After the president explained the pressure from Europe for a G7 brokered action on supporting the credit sector and reforming regulation, Rudd immediately insisted that the G20 was the solution. And then Rudd was stunned to hear George W. Bush say, hey, what's the G20? You know, in radio, dead silence, dead air is supposed to be just a big no-no. But what do you do? What do you do after what's the G20? You hear that? That's dead air. I heard that. I was just stymied. What's the G20? Holy Moses. 8 years. 8 years. This little pimple on humanity's ass has been in the office of the presidency, and at almost the close of those 8 years, he asks the prime minister, the leader of another country, what's the G20? Now, bear in mind, both Kevin Rudd and the White House have denied that Bush said, watch the G20. But being a Bush, he is first and all, first, last, and always a vindictive prick. Petty and vindictive. The White House website shows W. Dim Leader greeting 17 world leaders at the weekend G20 summit. But the photo with Mr. Rudd has disappeared. Because once again, we have been shown what a pathetic moron has been occupying the White House for nearly 8 long years. And now we are paying the piper's tune for leaving him in there and not taking the constitutionally mandated steps to take a murderous, ignorant, barbaric criminal out of the office via impeachment. As an adult American, I will be part of that collective shame when history asks, long after you and I are gone, why didn't you do something about that jackass who flaunted your laws and taunted your lily-livered representatives? Why didn't you do something? And all I can say is, hey, I tried. That's all you can say either. We tried. But the representatives we sent to Washington to speak for us they were called were found wanting. Hey, welcome to the program.
The whole thing I got to say is one of them's dead, but the other four idiots that wear the black robes in Washington, every time there's a story on them, it should say Antonin Scalia, head idiot who voted for Bush v. Gore.
Yeah.
And that should be the first line of any story about those five nitwits.
And somewhere out in Arizona, a nitwit by the name of Sandra Day O'Connor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that should
be introduced. That should be the first line, the introduction.
Yeah. This is Sandra Day O'Connor. She gave us George W. Bush. Please hold your rotten tomatoes till the end of the address.
At least till I'm out of range. Thank you, Ken.
Yeah. Stop!
Oh, God, I tell you what. Well, this weekend was just so good. Did you watch, I don't know if you saw it live or you go to Crook and Liar and watched, ABC did something odd. They put somebody on and actually put George Will in his place.
Did they really?
Had Paul Krugman.
Oh, my.
And George Will started on one of his little things, and Paul Krugman cut him down to size. Wanted to explain about how FDR really wasn't all that, you know, about coming out of the Great Depression and all that. And Krugman kind of went over.
Just tell me Krugman looked at him and said, George, you ignorant slut.
Not quite, but it was fun to watch. If you get a chance, go over to probably Crooks and Liars and watch it. It was enjoyable. But, I was watching the stuff this weekend, and the things that got to me were, well, I saw Mr. Pawlenty was on Fox Noise, and they tried to get him to talk about the story about, you know, them finding votes for Al Franken in a car and locked up and all this. And Pawlenty essentially said it didn't happen.
Right.
And it's just fun watching the Fox people kind of sputter, go, what? Because you could tell they had probably about 15 minutes of material lined up just to go with that. But amazingly enough, nowhere in there did anybody mention the fact that story came right out of Coleman's lawyers. But they were the ones pushing that story.
Yeah.
And apparently, it's one of those stories. Like, yeah, it's a wonderful story. If it were true, it might even be interesting.
That's the only problem. It ain't.
I know. Well, like I say, this weekend.
Stevens is on the way out. Begich is, what, up by 1,000 votes now?
He just keeps growing.
Yeah.
I think when they get the recount done, I think Al's going to win it. I think it's going to be close.
I think we've got a shot in Minnesota and Alaska, and they're scared to death in Georgia because they've trotted out. Good God, Luke, they have trotted out Zell Miller.
I know. I saw
they
that
took the straight jacket off and the hockey mask and everything and turned him loose on an unsuspecting public.
I hope somebody called Chris Matthews and warned him. Chris, don't let him out. No.
Yeah, it's like Hannibal Lecter, you know. Really, he'll come up and start gnawing on Chris Matthews' ankle and, you know, challenge him to a fist fight or something.
Well, like I say, the thing I think is even funnier watching that is watching some of the ones, the one who I think is coming out is going to be the big mouthpiece for right now for the GOP is our friend Mr. Gangrene. Nudie is going to come out, you know, because him and apparently some of these others down there at the governor's conference are all saying, it wasn't the fact that conservatism was wrong. It's the fact that Bush was there. It was Bush's fault. It wasn't the fact that our theories have all been blown up in our faces. You know, we got all we wanted. We still couldn't do it right. You know, I'm just curious, though, in the last couple of weeks. You know, after 2004, I keep remembering every time I turned around, all the news commentators going, does this mean liberalism is dead? So my question is, where are all the commentators asking the question, is conservatism dead?
Oh, they can't. That's one of those you're not allowed to ask.
I know, but you know what I mean? It's one of those things. It's like I think that's going to be the fun part for us for the next month or two is watching the conservative wing try to claim that they weren't conservative enough and the three governors essentially saying we need to do the big tent and just see who winds up standing up at the end of the fight. You know, at the end of the death cage match. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it's, you know, I think this is going to be enjoyable for us because we're going to be able to sit back here and watch the Republicans, I think, pull themselves in two different directions.
Well, guess who the first person to receive an invite to speak to CPAC next year is?
Sarah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Oh, God. Well, you know, one thing I noticed, one or two places I saw this mentioned the last day or two, did you notice on the Sunday show, it was mostly conservatives and Republicans on?
Well, yeah, Think Progress noted that, too.
Yeah.
If it's Sunday, it's still conservative?
Like I say, I think Barney Frank was on for about 5 minutes on Face the Nation. And, of course, Fox News had Mr. Dorgan on.
Yeah.
Which, like I say, is about like having Zell Miller on.
Yeah, he doesn't do real good as a liberal. But, you know.
Not especially. Well, yeah, that is sort of the Alan Combs version. Yeah, he's a liberal. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm trying to find the list here. Yeah, if it's Sunday, it's still conservative. This from Think Progress. 7 appearances this Sunday by Republican current or current elected office holders. 3 appearances by Democratic current elected office holders. 2 appearances by Republican former elected office holders. 1 appearance by Bush cabinet secretary T. Boone Pickens and Ted Turner. Hot diggity.
Well, ain't that a mix? Oh, gosh.
So that's 9, well, I call T. Boone 10, Bush cabinet secretary 11. That's 11 to 4.
Well, you have to remember now, one of those three, like I say, one of those three Democrats is Dorgan. He's sort of a
Yeah, so like 12 to 3.
Yeah. You know, I'm sorry he's gone, and I hate using this term. But one of the old shows I used to really love years ago was when Steve Allen used to have Meeting of the Minds.
Yeah.
This was the Meeting of the Mindless. You know.
Well, yeah, there's some blogger out there that refers to it as Press the Meat. I call it Meet the Prostitutes.
You know, it's one of those things that you're just sitting there going, you know, guys, you know, these guys have been pretty much proved that, you know, here for 6 years they had the presidency, they had the House, they had the Senate, and essentially had the judiciary. In 6 years, they managed to totally screw up the world.
Exactly. I know.
You know, and it's one of those things that's like, you know, I keep hearing all the time, you know, we have to keep pushing all these other, you know, about them pushing gay marriage and then wanting to get back pushing abortion. And I'm sitting there going, I really would like to sit down sometime with some of these people and go, why do you support the Republicans? They had it for 6 years and they didn't do a damn thing for you. That's their, they wave it out there in front of you. Come on, yeah. You know,
it's hard to admit one. Yeah, but look, I don't know if you noticed it or not, but the fine folks out at Focus on the Family.
Oh.
They dumped over $500,000 into spitting on the constitutional rights of Californians. And they just announced they had to go through the major layoffs today.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, what? Oh, Lordy B.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I am too, but, you know, it's just one of them things. Oh, but see, now the thing is they're going to be out there hitting up for donors.
Yeah.
You know, it is. They're going to be out there talking to little old women, telling them if they don't give them, you know, $1,000 that America's going to go under. You know, and you know, sometimes when you hear these people, you know, call in or something, you want me to say, hey, donate this money, you're just sitting there going, why?
Well, I guess James Dobson's going to have to come out and pull an Oral Roberts and say that if we don't get our money back, and, well, you know, God will call me home.
I'll give him the dime. Let him make it a direct collect call.
Here's a quarter. Find someone who cares.
Here, try Verizon. I'm sure it'll do Vonage. Go on. Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Luke, good talking to you, brother.
Hi, buddy. You have a good
one. Okay, see ya. Bye. Our pal Luke from East Tennessee. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is that me?
That is you.
Hey, man.
What's going on, boss?
How you been?
Just having a little fun.
Good. Listen, talking about, Luke mentioned crooks and liars.
Yeah.
There's an excellent article on the Crooks and Liars website called Panic in Detroit. And I'm sorry he had to hang up or go do something, whatever he had to do. But I'm on the other side of Ed. We're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. You know, I think that we should bail out the auto companies. And I think that for many reasons, and it's not, they have certainly created problems for themselves. But what's missing is any recognition that things are changing in Detroit. And things are changing and have been changing, you know, for, well, the last year, couple years here. And especially starting with the labor agreements. And, you know, these union workers have given up, well, they've given up a lot.
Millions.
Millions.
If not billions.
You know, the last UAW contract, which I don't believe it's, well, I don't know if it's 6 months old. Might be a year old. I don't know. But, you know, they've agreed to a two-tier system, you know, which basically, it means new hires are under a different contract.
Right.
They've set up a separate trust fund to finance future retiree health benefits that, you know, the companies will provide the initial money for the trust, but after that, the unions will manage it. And, you know, that takes off the company's books a tremendous burden. And, accounted for about half the gap of compensation between unionized workers of the big three and non-unionized workers for foreign automakers. So, you know, I mean, our labor costs are coming very much in line with the costs of Toyota and Honda and, you know, the main competition for these people. And, you know, in the works, there's some, you know, pretty exciting vehicles. I mean, you know, they have the Volt, which is coming out in 2010.
Yeah.
It's a plug-in hybrid. You know, it could go 40 miles without gas. Then there's the Chevy Cruze, which is a compact. And, you know, I mean, I think, and, you know, we have to hope that, yeah, that the American people will remember this recent past. You know, I mean, the scary thing about this is that now that gas, even in West Virginia, is down to $2.30 a gallon, will everybody just go back to their own, you know, old ways, which has happened repeatedly.
Yeah,
over the years.
Well, you know, if you give a drunk with the shakes a bottle, everything gets better.
Exactly, and he doesn't need to quit drinking anymore because he's got some.
Yeah.
You're right. Exactly, but, you know, this is the Chevy Cruze, it's a compact, and that's a gas-only vehicle that gets 45 miles to a gallon of gas.
Yeah, finally something to compete with maybe a Honda Civic.
Well, exactly. And, you know, it took them long enough to get here.
And that's, ultimately that's the question, Wayne. You know, it's not just the American auto buyer or the American consumer, God, I hate that word, who was out there buying the SUVs and so forth. Detroit was shoving these down our throats.
Yes, they were. But we also loved them, too. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
The bigger they got, the more we want. Well, look, how many Humvees did they sell, for crying out loud?
Yeah, and Cadillac Escalades and Yukon Denalis. Right. And you ever notice that General Motors named all these things after things that the most fragile parts of nature that these vehicles stood to destroy?
Right, yeah. And that just shows how Republican they are.
Yeah, and the thing that concerns me most is that the right wing will, you know, I mean, the Bush administration and the Congress in this so-called lame duck session, they're already at loggerheads over this. And I don't know what the point is. It's George Bush, you know, it's not on his priority list because apparently the Bush family doesn't have a whole lot of money tied up in Detroit. Now,
and that's probably exactly right, you know. Well, I mean, you know, my concern is the workers. That's what I'm concerned
about. And I've already seen the right wing is out there. I started early in the program with this. The right wing is out there screaming that Detroit's in trouble because of big labor.
Oh, that's exactly what they're screaming. And, you know, and like I say, they fail to recognize the changes that have been made. And, you know, they want to pretend like no changes have been made. And, you know, these people, I mean, you know, I heard a guy on the show today that says, you know, you'd take the most unskilled worker in the world and put them in an auto plant and he'd be fine because they don't have to have any skills.
Well, how long is it before we get the usual right-wing myth of the guy who gets $30 an hour for pushing a broom? Haven't heard it yet, but we will.
Oh, it'll come. It'll come, you know. But anyway, I think that, you know, at this, because they are making these changes, and, you know, and I'm not saying just, you know, hand them the $25 billion or whatever they want and walk away. I mean, it has to come with strings attached. And I think, you know, GM, the CEO of GM, I guess, was asked, you know, what if one of the conditions of getting this money that you and your management team have to leave and be replaced by somebody that, you know, we figure will do a better job. And, you know, his answer was he didn't think that that was necessary at all. And that, you know, well, what he actually said was we take no responsibility for what's happened at all. You know, it's not our fault.
Yeah, no, it's the workers. They designed the cars. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
Right. So, I mean, I think that should be one of the conditions is, you know.
Well, they get $25 billion.
Changes at the top.
Absolutely has to happen. But, Wayne, they get $25 billion. What the hell's wrong with the people of the United States of America getting $25 billion worth of stock?
Well, I don't see anything wrong with that at all. Not at all.
And then when they get well, they can buy it back at market price.
You know, and, you know, remember Lee Iacocca paid the money back. And Lee Iacocca reduced his salary to $1 a year. Now, you know, I mean, there's a guy that, well, and that's why he was able to turn that company around. Now, granted, you know, they're in a similar straits now, but Lee Iacocca isn't there anymore.
Lee Iacocca did not do that to them.
No, he didn't.
No.
So, you know, I think that, well, I mean, just the, you know, I mean, all people just think about auto workers. I mean, you know, the effects thing these companies collapse would just be, well, absolutely devastating to the economy, you know.
But we can transition those workers away from, you know, the dirty old gas-fueled stuff, the monster cars. We can have some impact like that.
Yes, we can.
Because
and
obviously, Japanese and German smaller cars are selling quite well.
Yes, they are.
And Detroit's not doing real well with this gas-guzzling niche market they've tried to carve out for themselves.
Well, and you know, and I mean, that's another, you know, where things are improving. Well, in this article, it says Chrysler factories now match Toyota for the most productive, while Fords and GMs are improving. And it says something, a Toledo Jeep factory was actually named the nation's most effective, you know, above Toyota. So that's saying we're moving in the right direction. And, you know, since we are moving in the right direction, I think that, you know, that we should bail them out. Like I say, there should be strings attached. But, you know, to let it crash now that they are moving in the right direction, if they were stubbornly not changing and, you know, and the unions hadn't given up any concessions and, you know, we're still going to build, you know, vehicles that get 3 miles to a gallon of gas, well, I'd say then let them fail. But they are moving the right direction, and I think to let fail at this point would be a huge mistake.
You know, they want stimulated so bad. Here's a crazy idea I've had banging around in my head, Wayne. You know, everybody, most of America, I wasn't one of them, Most of America got this big old, big old anywhere between $300 and $1,400, don't spend it all in one place, phony stimulus check last summer. What about a real stimulus? What about indirect stimulus for Detroit? What about, loan guarantees for American citizens to go buy American cars?
Well, I would go along with that.
I mean, do you see what I'm saying?
Well, and I mean, it's the same thing. Well, FDR had a plan. I talked about it last night. I don't know if you heard me talking to John or you were busy doing, but, it was the homeowner thing, the way to solve that is just what FDR did with, the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. Well, nobody got thrown out of their homes. They stopped foreclosures. And, mortgages were refinanced and refinanced to the value of that the home is now. I mean, if you bought a house that cost, $200,000 and now it's only worth $140,000, well, then that's what your mortgage got refinanced at,
$140,000.
Yeah. And then the banks weren't allowed to close. The banks had to stay open.
Right.
And in lieu of the mortgage payment, people, until they got the refinance or things were straightened out, they got the people paid an equivalent rent to the banks, which gave the bank, recapitalized the banks, gave the banks back money so that they could lend again.
Yeah.
And that didn't require a bailout from the citizens.
No, it didn't. And see, that's why I was talking about, that's why I mentioned the thing about, making it possible for Americans to buy an American car. Because I got to thinking, I guess it was 2, 3, 4 years ago, maybe, that far. A little story came out, and you know how the news cycle is. It went up like a little balloon and quickly dropped back to the earth. But a lot of these right-wing talkers, it turned out, were being paid on the sly by Detroit to say nice things about their cars. And there was audio of Flush Flimball, for instance, saying, "Oh, I tell you what, my friends, this is a this GMC Canyonero is the finest automobile I've ever driven." Blah 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 blah. Well, we do something like what I just suggested. He has to shut up, because he's already been on the welfare dole.
Yeah, he has.
And he's got to be behind. He's got to be behind America, America patriotism. And all of a sudden he's going to start saying let him die when he's already had the check cut for him. I kind of like this little idea.
I think it's a good idea. But, he's also too busy talking about the Obama recession.
Yeah, I know. And they're out there and they're very busy now talking about the Obama administration assault on gun owners, because the questionnaire for working in the Obama administration has a question on it that says, do you own a gun? Is the gun registered? Has anybody ever been injured with this gun? And the right wing is having an absolute purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy, Wayne.
Would you be to answer that question?
Yeah, I can answer that question. I got guns.
Right, but so what?
Yeah, big deal.
It says,
are they registered? And I'd have to write, no, they're not registered because registration is not required in this state.
There you go.
If I move to D.C., I leave the guns home.
Right. Exactly.
Where's the problem? But the NRA is by George. They're out there, Wayne, and they're all kinds of upset. Let's see. What did the NRA say? Oh, yeah. This week it became clear that the new administration's anti-gun agenda even infects the process of staffing the administration. One thing's for sure. If the Obama team thinks these are good questions to ask job applicants, it's only a matter of time before they'll want to ask the rest of us, too.
Oh,
yeah.
How scary.
Meanwhile, the National Rifle Association thinks it's okay to fire somebody for their sexual orientation or fire somebody for, just about anything. That sort of at-will paradise, you know what I mean?
Right, exactly. Right.
Yeah, but can't ask if they've got a gun.
It's a messed up world.
I know.
But
I know.
Did you read that article I talked to you about yesterday?
Yeah, the one from Salon?
Yeah.
That was a very good article.
I think that was an excellent article. Excellent article. And that, well, it explains the, well, the hope. I think it explains the hope much better than I ever could. That was a great article. Great article. Yeah.
And I'm gonna keep indulging in me some hope. But I tell you what,
me too.
The hope starts in 63 days and some odd hours.
Exactly. That's exactly when it starts.
Because as long as we've still got this chump in the White House who doesn't know what the G20 was.
Well, these people are frightening. I just got an email from Greg LeRoy, Good Jobs First guy.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, about all the rules they're trying to change. You interviewed him, didn't you?
Yeah, he was on the show.
Yeah, he was on the show. All the rules they're trying to change on grants and, you know, public hearing kind of stuff. They'll work feverishly to mess things up as much as they possibly can for the next 60 whatever there are, you know. And also, too, you've got to call Bird's office tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, I know it looks like, Lieberman's going to be able to keep his chairmanship, but Bird's one of the 19 senators that sits on this committee.
Yeah.
And, Joe Lieberman has to go. And, you know, I don't care if he remains in the caucus or not. I mean, how the hell can you can't count on him to vote with us anyway.
No.
On important things.
No, but you know what? There's Harry Reid out there capitulating again.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know.
It wouldn't surprise me a dime's worth.
He's got to go, too.
Yeah, ain't that the truth.
As far as I'm concerned.
I'm scared to death they could go into one of these meetings and Joe Lieberman could come out Senate Majority Leader.
Yeah, well, the way they're acting, yeah.
Yeah, by the time Harry gets done apologizing.
And, like you say, they drug out Zell Miller. I mean, I'm thoroughly convinced that Franken is going to win Minnesota. And what is it, Begich?
Yeah, Begich.
Yeah, Begich is going to win Alaska. Now, I don't know about Georgia. But, there's another thing to be, even if we ended up with a 60-seat Senate, that doesn't mean, you know, how many of them are so-called conservative Democrats?
I know. We're not out of the woods. It's going to take, something like the Employee Free Choice Act, it's going to take a big push to get it through.
It's going to take a real big push. In fact, there's a couple seminars coming up on it that I plan on attending because it's, that's my main issue. I mean, that's something that we have to have. But that's going to be a fight. That is going to be a fight. And, with these so-called conservative Democrats, isn't that synonymous with Republicans?
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I look at it anyway. But
somebody like Ben Nelson from Nebraska.
Yeah.
You want to talk about Democrat in name only, for heaven's sakes.
Right. And, so you think you could count on that guy's vote for this?
Not in a million years.
No, exactly. So, and that's Lieberman, at this particular point, I wouldn't even care if Lieberman would vote for the Employees Free Choice Act, which I don't know where he stands on it, to be honest with you. But, he has completely disgraced himself. He's completely turned on this party, and I don't want any part of him. And I think he ought to be stripped of all his subcommittees, committee chairmanship of Homeland Security. That needs to go.
Sometimes you just do the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
And there have to be consequences for your actions, don't there?
There are for me and you, everybody else.
Yes, there certainly are. I'm quite familiar with consequences. the guy's, he's a traitor. He has no loyalties.
No, he has no loyalty. He has no morals. He has no courage. He is a quisling, I wouldn't trust him with a dead skunk.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Me neither. He's got to go. And, you know, if he wants to stay in the Democratic caucus and vote with Democrats, I guess that'd be okay. But if he wants to go with his buddy, Mitch McConnell is, another real good friend of ours.
Chinless Mitch.
Yeah. There's another good thing, too. His old lady ain't going to be Secretary of Labor anymore.
No, I just want to see who is going to be Secretary of Labor.
Well, do you hear Andy Stern's name mentioned?
I was wondering if there would be anything to that.
Well, I'm wondering myself.
Of course, that would piss off John Sweeney to the ends of the earth.
Well, it wouldn't make me happy either. I'm not a big fan of him.
Well, Andy has this "let's get cozy with corporate America" thing going for him right now.
Let's get cozy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Andy Stern's in favor of corporate unions, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You know, as long as he gets some dues money.
Right.
That's the way I read that.
As long as it keeps his pool filled and warm.
Yeah. Right. So. I don't know. I'd like to, you know, Dennis Kucinich would be a real.
Oh, wouldn't he? Wouldn't he?
Yes, he
wouldn't
would.
He would. Oh.
Yes, he would.
But I tell you what, given the job he's been doing with that subcommittee of his in the House, one, he needs a committee chairmanship all his own.
I think so, too.
The job he's been doing just with that subcommittee, with those hearings last week, my Lord, there was more starch and more guts in that hearing than Nancy Pelosi's ever exhibited in her entire career.
What a disappointment.
Yeah, I know.
A disappointment.
Well, man, I got to roll on. We've run over a little bit, but I kind of let that happen because we got shortchanged a few minutes with me having to reboot all the electrical stuff here early in the morning.
What happened? How much snow are you getting?
It was sticking pretty good when I came in the door, and I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple of inches out there so far.
Yeah, they're saying, I don't know, 3 to 6.
Some people have said as many as 8 around here, but I figure that'll be 1,000 feet on up, going up 60.
Yeah.
Those people get hammered.
You know, what are you going to do? It's winter.
Yeah, you know, stay warm, put on a good pot of soup, sit back and watch the snow fall.
Yep.
Exactly. All right, we'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, bro, good talking to you.
Good talking to you. Thanks for the call.
Amen.
Later.
Bye.
Bye. That's the boss, man. That's Wayne. I haven't heard from Wayne in a while. I tell you what, it's awful good when we do, because among other things, he brings stuff that I usually have not seen. And frankly, you know, there probably will be some form of bailout, but George, it's not gonna be anything George Bush lets through. So I think we have to wait until the intelligent guy takes the oath, and then he has a Congress he can work with. Close out with an email, because I didn't get to this story this evening, and I had wanted to. But I want to close out with an email. And by the way, no matter. I'll stitch everything together and get a normal show up, but it might take a little while. I'm not in the habit of outing anyone, so I'm not going to put the name with this email. But it just some great sentiment and some wonderful lines. Hi, Bob. Over the weekend, I was reading and viewing various city-town marches against Proposition 8. I must say that I was truly and personally touched by the mixture of the crowds across the nation. I only wish my health could have allowed me to join the New York City March. As a 57-year-old lesbian, I never thought that the day would come that gays and heteros would join together to fight injustice and bigotry, but the day arrived and it felt so good. I also would like to say how much I appreciate the affirming voice you give to all gays and lesbians and how the Horn family makes me feel so welcome. Below are a few of the signs that I thought you might also enjoy. I, too, was proud to see what happened over the weekend. And it happened in all kinds of places. It happened in New York. It happened in L.A. It happened in Nashville. You know, when folks start marching in the Deep South, then change is coming. So I'll leave the name off the note. I don't. I imagine she probably wouldn't mind me reading her name, but absent permission to do so, I think that's just. It's my attempt to be respectful. But some of the signs from this weekend. What? Joseph Smith had 40 wives, and I can't have one? Don't tell me I can't register at Barney's. Just another straight guy for gay rights. We're here and we're starting to get pissed off. Marriage is a human right, not a heterosexual privilege. Wow. If you met my girlfriend, you'd want to marry her too. And this one right here. I pay all my taxes for a portion of my rights. And here's another one. Jesus had two dads. Yeah. Did you cast a ballot or a stone? Always a bridesmaid, never a bride by law. And she says, FYI, this sign was especially funny because it was held up by a macho guy dressed in leather and chains. Against gay marriage? Then don't have one. And finally, I'm too old for this shit. Equal rights now. Beautiful. Just beautiful. So that's it for tonight. I hope you'll join us tomorrow evening. Same Bob time, same Bob channel. Thank you to John Fox, Peter Godbold, Ben Birch, our IT professional, chief engineer, and hardest working man in liberal talk, respectively. Everything you hear comes through WhiteRoseSociety.org, and I don't think anybody really knows, myself included, how hard Ben Birch works. Our thanks also to the hardest working, bravest people I know, bravest group of people, because they are many, and they are passionate, and they are brilliant, and they are strong. Our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Stand with them, because they're standing. No matter where you are in this country, they're standing for you. It is getting mighty thin here. Last month, this, and the month before last, it is getting mighty thin here. If you are able and you haven't participated in keeping the horn going, this would be a great time to jump in. To everyone who does contribute, please know you have our eternal thanks and that we know what a sacrifice it is for you to keep this going. And we honor you and thank you. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.